This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. I'm Doug Hagman, co-host on by Sun Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report. Folks, you're about to hear an incredible three-hour program. We've got much to discuss tonight. Our guest tonight is going to be Dave Hodges from the Common Sense Show for the entire program. I think this is going to be a fantastic show. Folks, you're listening to the only show where the news and analysis of the news is presented to you in 3D. We look well beyond the fog of misinformation and disinformation and misdirection to get to the news behind the news. And of course, our guest does that as well. I wanted to mention, ladies and gentlemen, that tonight's portions of tonight's broadcast, of course, are brought to you by our sponsors, Nature Box. Nature Box delivers just fantastic, great-tasting snacks right to your door. Pay them a visit. Go to HagmanandHagman.com. Scroll down. You'll find a link to Nature Box. It takes you to naturebox.com/CFB radio. You know, that's correct. Nature Box, free snacks. They're going to offer you, through us, free snacks at naturebox.com/CFB radio. We thank them for hanging with us and sponsoring our program as well. For new listeners, we broadcast live each and every weeknight from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Our home base on the internet is HagmanandHagman.com. Visit us there, why don't you? And we're also simulcast by the Christian United Broadcasting Network. There you can tune us in at the HagmanandHagmanReport.com. And once again, folks, we want to thank you so much for your deliberate investment of time. The time that you spend with us is precious to us, and hopefully you get something out of it as well. We need to be prepared for what's coming and what's coming down the road, coming down the pike. Oh, you know, I do have a feeling that we're going to be in the thick of it here not too long from now. I really do. I don't know when. I don't know what. I don't know where. Well, where is going to be all over, but, you know, I'm just not exactly certain of what. But I'm very uneasy about things coming down the pike, and I think that we have to really prepare practically, spiritually, prepare each other. And those of you listening to this, you know, this is not to frighten you or to push on edge. You know, we're in this together. We really are. We're not going to escape from what's coming. We can certainly get out of the way, mitigate damage to ourselves, our houses, households, that is. Know that whatever is coming, we can get through it. We can work through it. One way or another, we're fighting from a position of victory. Joe, welcome to the studio today. We did some things today in preparation for, as well, in preparation for the Prophecy in the News conference coming up on March 5th, 6th, and 7th. Visit Prophecy in the News. Yeah. Register there. We'll see you down there.
It was a good day here in the studio, uneventful for the most part, but we did get a lot done from the Prophecy and the News planning to other things that we have coming down the pike, and people are going to really be interested in. We do have our guest tonight, Dave Hodges, thecommonsenseshow.com. Go to his website and bookmark that site as he has constant updates on information from his perspective, from his intelligence contacts, and he has new content up there and stuff we're going to get into tonight.
By the way, Joe, if you go to HagmanandHagman.com, scroll down or look on the right-hand side, he's in our circle of trust. I've got to say, he's a man that does his homework, does his research, takes it very seriously. He writes articles consistently, which is good. Yeah, I mean, and he's a guy that I consider a good friend, and I'll tell you what, very, very transparent, very honest, very detail-oriented. He's a good guy. The Common Sense Show is the great show, too. I mean, I'm proud to know Dave Hodges. I'm proud to be associated with him as a colleague. So, very good.
And we're just waiting for him to come on.
Okay, all right. That's fine. You know, man, there's just so much going on, isn't there? I mean, if you look at the landscape with respect to the headlines, what do you follow? Where do you go? What do you look at? Do we focus on the underinflated balls of the last football game? Is that what we do?
That seems to be what the public is focused on.
You know what? More people are upset at the underinflated balls than they are of the
lines of the State of the Union.
Well, of Obama not being eligible. It's like more people would be upset about an ineligible receiver downfield during the Super Bowl than an ineligible man in the Oval Office. That's the way of the world. And then you complain about it. Oh, my goodness, you're one of those people. You're a birther. Of course, the pejorative accusations are flying around. But as I said, our good friend, and I'll tell you, I have a lot of respect for this man, Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show. He's in our circle of trust. Go to HagmanHagman.com. You can click on the banner, take it right to his website. But bookmark his website outside of ours, definitely, and listen to his show. You got to listen to this guy. You got to listen to him. I mean, I do believe he's got his finger on the pulse of what is taking place. He's got a lot of good sources. He's got a lot of good information, and we love the guy. So, with that, Dave Hodges from the Common Sense Show, commonsenseshow.com. Welcome to tonight's program, sir.
Hey guys, great to be with you. I'm sorry, I don't think you guys recognize my landline number. I've been there and I found the call there on myself because I thought it might be a problem with number recognition. So I apologize for not being more clear. During one of our breaks, I'll call you back on the landline because we'll get a better signal.
Yeah, that's my fault, Dave. I thought that was you. I wasn't sure if we had two numbers for you, though, so I was hesitant to answer that. I saw the different area code, so I wanted to be sure before I answered it, and I waited for your other number.
Well, I'll tell you what we can do. Why don't we take a quick break right now, just a 30-minute, 30-second, a minute break, and bring Dave on where he's clear and comfortable, because I'm sure he's not the most comfortable.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back with that, folks. You're listening to a special Wednesday edition of the Hagman Hagman Report. It is Wednesday, the 21st day of January 2015. I'm Doug Hagman in studio with Joe Hagman. Folks, we're going to be right back after this. Stay with us, please.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And we have Dave Hodges with us. Dave, is this clearer for you?
It's very good, yes. I know that can be confusing because, unfortunately, I have two different area codes, one for the landline and one for the cell phone. So it's a much better signal here on the landline, a lot more stable.
That's, you sound
thanks
good
for having me with you guys. I'm glad to be on, and it's interesting times, so they say. It seems like about every 6 months I do something to make somebody really upset, and they come after me, and that's happening right now. I'm under attack from the Russian media. And I've been able to verify it as of today.
Okay.
And, if you guys would like to get into this a little bit.
Far away.
I've been writing about what concerns me. And I don't mean to sound like end times prophecy. It's not for me to interpret. But I do believe we're headed towards Armageddon. And I've been writing about, the forces lining up for the Third World War. And I wrote an article called The Grand Chessboard of World War III. And then I wrote a follow-up article. Said these are 30 ways that Putin is preparing to win World War III. And then I got into some other aspects of it. I've been writing about this pretty much all week. And the one article I wrote about Putin and his preparing to win World War III really drew the ire of many, 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 many people. But it wasn't your usual, Dave, I'm mad at you, I hate what you wrote, and here's why I hate it. The people that were writing in that were negative were saying all the same things. And it was probably about 10 negative comments in, and I said, man, there's a real pattern here. And here was the problem. What they were complaining about, I didn't do. All I did was write about Russian and Putin military preparedness. I wasn't making moral judgments that Obama good, Putin bad, and they accused me of being members of the Jewish Zionist mafia representing the Rothschild banking interests. And this stuff never even came into the discussion. I just talked about Russian air intrusions, the building up of their nuclear submarine fleet, why we're going the other direction, how they're militarizing the Arctic. And I just went through 30 things, and I said, these are things that should have all of us concerned because this could be done to us in terms of an act of war and using these weapons against us. And these people, you thought what I would have insulted their mother's chastity, the way that they reacted. I've never had such a vehement attack. Well, the attacks have increased. And even as I moved away from Putin and I actually focused on Obama, I wrote about 15 ways that Obama is basically stripping our military down to where we probably can't sustain anything. In fact, even the Joint Chiefs are on the record as saying that cutting down to 420,000 men, we can't maintain theaters of war that we probably could be up against. Syria, Iran possibly, definitely Ukraine, and our Joint Chiefs are even saying this is now problematic. So I wrote about that, and even though I criticized Obama, even though I questioned his loyalty to the people of this country and his support for the military, I still had these same people writing in saying the same things, exactly the same things. And then they started getting threatening. They got harassing, whereas one person was writing to me, and they said they had a PhD in chemistry physics. Okay, well, I work in that kind of environment. There's no such PhD. The discipline does not exist. And I got threatened. In very, very graphic terms. And so I called my best source. And I told my best source, I said, should I be concerned? And his reaction was, yeah, you're darn right you should be concerned. He said, give me the IP address, and I'm going to see what I can find out. And he came back about a half hour later, and he said, this is traced to an element connected to the TASS Russian news agency. And I said, well, there's a couple of more here we might want to look at, too, that are not quite as vehement in their threat against me, but it's pretty clear that they want to do me harm. So I gave this individual these other two IPs, and one traced to TASS and one traced to Pravda, the Pravda.ru. And we got a name on one of them. And if this doesn't stop, I'm going public. I will publish the IP addresses. I will publish names. I will turn this over to law enforcement. In fact, I've said that I have responded to a couple of these people, and I've told them if I get any more like this, this is going to go to Sheriff Toropile. I live in his county.
Wow. Well,
I'm taking this very seriously now. This isn't about ticked off readers. Now, they're also calling my sponsors.
Oh, yeah, we got that.
They're also calling, they've called a couple of colleagues of mine, or they have contacted them, I should say, by email, not called them. I heard from one of them last night. He asked me not to mention his name today on the show because he says I don't want to be thrown into the same pool, and that's fine. But, you know, this is, what do they say? You know you're over the target when you're getting the flack.
That's right.
And
let me say this. A quote of the day on our website is, it's a mistake to judge people by their friends, judge them by their enemies, and I'm very proud of my enemies. Norman Tebbit, British Conservative Party, said that. You're absolutely correct, sir. You're absolutely correct. And if I can just interject one thing. in the studio today, well, in our offices, actually, different from the studio. Joe and I were busy today working on a few things. We have been, and just so everyone understands this, the alternative media, Dave Hodges, Doug Hagman, Steve Quayle, have been publicly ridiculed, slandered. There's libel. There's a whole bunch of stuff here. Our sponsors have been contacted, or sponsors contacted have contacted us saying, what are you doing? And I told all of our sponsors today, well, all except our partners, of course, but our sponsors, look, make a decision. We don't need you. And if you're not going to back us, then that's it. We don't have to. We will not edit our content because of sponsorship and the stories. We'll take the hit. So, Dave, ladies and gentlemen, I know what Mr. Hodges has gone through and is going through to some degree, because we're going through it here. And I'll tell you one thing: the threats are real. The death threats are real. The graphics, I mean, the graphic nature of the threats are real. I mean, they're insidious. The people who are behind the organized attacks, are either mentally imbalanced, mentally ill. They're liars. They're slanderers. They're people that wouldn't make a pimple on the butt of an ass, literal ass. And they're coordinated attacks. They're coordinated. Sorry, Dave.
I've come to conclude that from the week. You're absolutely right. They are coordinated. The themes are identical. I have a long-standing history going back about 15, 16 months with conflict with the Russian media. And some people may recall this, but I think it's worth going back into the history of it. Back in September of 2013 through October, I had discovered a series of drills that had taken place involving Russian troops and DHS and FEMA. I uncovered a document. It was a FEMA bilateral agreement with the Russian Foreign Ministry that allowed for a minimum of 15,000 Russian troops to come in and train in the country. I had pictures of Russians in DHS vehicles supplied to me by Sherry Wilcox. I had pictures of Russians at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs. I had all the proof that I need. And I started running stories about martial law preparations involving Russian soldiers. They were involved in directing traffic at the AAA baseball team in Colorado Springs. That's the minor club to the Colorado Rockies. And they were basically learning to interact with the American public. And this is what you'd have to have in a martial law situation. And why use Russians? Simply put, they won't have a hesitation to fire on American citizens. And there's not the manpower, because the rule of thumb in occupation is you have to have one soldier for every 50 citizens. And so DHS can't do that job. Even our own military couldn't do that job. So I ran these articles, and then one night at 11 p.m., I was contacted by a Russian producer from the Voice of Russia, and this was back in October. And people are going to get to see this again tomorrow, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And she said, I'd like to get you on the air to talk about your recent rash of articles, quote unquote. And I said, well, what articles will that be? I said, I write quite a bit. And she goes, oh, about the Russians and martial law preparations. And I said, certainly, when would you like to do this? And she said, tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. your time. And I thought, wow, you're giving me a six-hour warning, and I really should be in bed, or I should be sleeping in the morning. But I said, okay, I'll do this. And I went up to the Voice of Russia website early that morning. I got up about 3:30 in the morning, and I went to the website, and I looked at how they promoed me coming on. Now, this was just after Alex Jones had been on CNN with Piers Morgan. That'll influence me here, as you'll hear. And they portrayed me as no one but the host of the Common Sense Show. Now, I'm setting my ego aside when I say this, but I'm someone who has proven that I can do research. And I don't even mean what I write about here with our government, our corporations, and the criminal enterprise that's taken over our government. I'm talking about what I've done in academia. I have taught research classes at the graduate and post-secondary level. I wrote statistic course for a college that used that for 10 years. I have a long history in this field, and I've proven my worth. I have the academic credentials, and I have the work experience. They should have promoted me on Voice of Russia when I provided them with my bio, that I am a proven researcher, or at least what my credentials were. Instead, Dave Hodges, controversial host of the Common Sense Show, and I could see right there they were setting me up to marginalize me. And I thought, okay, I'm going to take a page out of the Alex Jones book. So I actually called my news director, Andy DiRiso, that night, and we had a fairly lengthy conversation about the fact that we knew I was being set up. And I just said, well, I guess the only thing to do is to do an Alex Jones. You go on that show, and you do not let them divert you. And I went on there, and they actually had the main host get sick. So they brought in this young, little cute thing. Her picture was up on the website. Her name was Kate Zickel. I'm sure her name wasn't Kate, probably Catherine the Great. And she wasn't ready for what hit her. You guys have been on my show, both of you. You know I let my guests talk. I don't cut them off. And but in this instance, when I was a guest on their show, I blew right into the commercial breaks. I blew right by their question because I knew what they were going to do. Well, this wasn't the end of it. The interview was supposed to go 20 minutes. It went 10 because they did not get the desired result. Well, later that day, and this was, by the way, this played big time. This was on their New York station, their Washington, D.C. station, and 32 stations in Europe and throughout Russia. And, of course, it ended up in a lot of their print media as well, too. And here's how they portrayed it on the Voice of Russia. Extremist Dave Hodges and something about phony accusations, you know, against the Russians. Well, I saw red, no pun intended. So that night, I published another article
where I went after their lack of professionalism, their yellow journalism, how they misrepresented me, how they marginalized me, and how I had prepared for it. And I took a chapter out of the Alex Jones book, which I thought was very appropriate given the circumstances, is I applaud Alex for what he did with Piers Morgan, because if he had played nice on that interview on CNN, he wouldn't have got his message out, and I knew I was in the same boat. So I wrote that, and then they didn't leave it alone. One of their senior producers wrote to the comment page on my website at the Common Sense Show, and this is a quote, guys. This is laughable. She said, well, we are state-owned, but we don't always do propaganda. I mean, I couldn't stop laughing when I read this about how stupid can you be to even admit to this. And, of course, there was another round of articles, and eventually, after about 5 days of exchanges, they gave up. So here's what I'm doing tomorrow. I've had enough of the Russians. I do not like Obama. I do not like the Federal Reserve. I do not like the criminal corporations on Wall Street that have hijacked our government. But I would take these people over living in Russia under Putin, where they murder journalists regularly, where they suppress people with brute force. We think we have problems here with enforcement of our Constitution and treating people with dignity and respect. You ain't seen nothing until you spend some time in Russia. And I know because I've had Russian foreign exchange students. I communicate with people from Russia. It is not much better than it was in the days of the Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin. They're just not hauling people off to Siberia in the numbers they once were. The average American would want nothing to do with these people. And so the people out there who are drinking from the Putin Kool-Aid, you need to wake up. Because you can sit here and you can defend Putin as fighting against the New World Order, and he's anti-Rothschild. When their SS-20s come down on our head and their backfire bombers are dropping bombs on your cities, do you think he's going to give a damn about you supporting him? You're an American. You belong in a body bag. That's how he views us. He is not your friend. So I'm declaring war on the Russian media. I'm going to go back in the past tomorrow, and I'm going to publish this on my site. I'm going to give it to Steve Quayle. Hopefully he'll put it up on his site. I'm going to distribute it on Facebook, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to put the old interview up. I'm going to put their deception up. I'm going to talk about what's happened now. I'm going to publish the threats, and I'm going to redact the names and the IP addresses for now. But if they continue, that's going to come out and be public as well, too. And I'm declaring war on the Russian media. I'm not putting up with it. What I did was give an honest assessment of how the forces are aligning for World War III. Obama is setting us up for defeat. And I have an article on there where I talk about 15 things that Obama has done to destroy this military readiness of this country to protect us. Their ability to protect us has been marginalized tremendously. Putin has gone the opposite direction. China has gone the opposite direction. We are in a great deal of danger when World War III breaks out. This is why Obama's had to fire 260 senior command officers, because they're not drinking the Kool-Aid either. They know they're in trouble. They know they're going to send troops to their death the way that things are lining up. We have a traitor in the White House, and I'm going to keep writing. I'm going to keep exposing, because people need to be prepared. You need to have food, water, all the proper things that we keep telling you about on these shows over and over, because these days are not far off. Putin is being bled dry, and Doug, I think it's important to talk about why. The Russians got tired, so the Chinese, of the world reserve currency being the dollar and having to buy a dollar to buy oil, and that was the only backing for our currency we had. And they rebelled, and they went to Iran, and Iran agreed to sell oil, you know, for gold, and India got involved with all the BRICS, all the BRIC nations, and so we retaliated. We stirred it up in Ukraine. It says, okay, we'll mess with your gas shipments. You want to mess with the petrodollar? We're going to mess with your gas shipments. And then what does Putin do? Okay, he starts making noises like he's going to cut off gas to Europe, and he finally did it. And so what do? We plunge the price of oil to a level. Russians need about $90 to $100 for a barrel of oil for their economy to work. Now, everyone's trying to tell me Russia's still acquiring gold. Well, that might be true, but they're spending it faster than they can get it, because we're eating into Russian reserves with regard to their currency of gold, which is really the BRIC currency now, and we're eating into their oil supplies because they are going broke. The ruble is unstable as a result of this, and it's not helping us either. If we hit $40 a barrel of gas in this country, the estimates that I've been told is that we're going to start having pretty serious spot shortages of various goods because the middlemen won't be able to make money on shipping products. So this was the brinksmanship that we're playing now. Putin does something, we retaliate, and so forth and so on, like a bunch of sixth graders. Rather than sitting down at the table and trying to work out the issues, this is how they're choosing to play this out. We are in a collision course for World War III, and it's all about economics. It's all about whose central bank is going to survive.
Man, you said a whole lot right there. And folks, I hope you heard what Dave Hodges said, because you said a whole lot. And Dave, let's talk about the oil and gas prices, the prices at the pump, the price of oil at the barrel level. What's going on here? People want to know. What I found is people, they're almost in a celebratory mood. Oh, gas prices are so low. Oh, this is great. And they will, you know.
If you're like me, you're saving
over
half the money you were paying a year ago on gas.
That's the cost. But Dave, at what price?
You're absolutely right. The question is, at what price? And what we're looking at, I mean, that was great yesterday. I pulled in to our QT market here in the Phoenix area, and I filled up for $1.75 a gallon. $1.75 a gallon. We haven't seen price like that since Bush was president in his first term. And it's wonderful, but it's kind of like crack cocaine. Supposedly crack cocaine feels really good when you first start using it, but it doesn't take long until it becomes your nemesis and a threat to your life. And that's what these oil prices are going to be doing. Putin is not going to sit by and let us destroy his economy by undercutting his oil, where he has to go into his reserves. What is his tolerance? 10% of his reserves spent? 50%? Where is he going to draw the line? And he's going to strike, and he'll strike somewhere. And I'll tell you something else happened today, too, and I'll get back to the oil prices, but I think it's important to mention this. When I was talking about to my source today, and he's very, very well-connected, he said, I need to show you something. So we've got this program in common where he can take over my computer. And he took me to an Internet setting that no one else can really get into from the public. You have to have special knowledge, permission, and so forth. And he took me in there as a guest on my screen, but it was through his server. And he said, I want to show you what's going on here. And he said, this is not an accident. This is a precursor to war. And I was telling Joe about this before the show. What I was watching or I was looking at was a global grid map in flat screen format. And they were a list of cyber attacks anywhere in the world. And they would identify the source of the attack with the IP number and the location of the attack, where it was headed. And almost all of the attacks, well, the majority of them came out of China. But the second biggest set of attacks came out of Russia. And we were third. And I found it really interesting. The Russians and the Chinese were hitting St. Louis and Dallas tremendously. And St. Louis was accounting for probably 35-40% of the hits. Well, what's in St. Louis? I don't think they're trying to start a race war. What's in St. Louis? In the Kansas City area? Connections to the Federal Reserve. Kansas City Federal Reserve. And the ancillaries are in St. Louis. And that's what he told me when we were on the phone. He said, this is what you're seeing here. We are under tremendous cyber attack right now against our financial institutions. Back in November 10th, the IMF and the FDIC sponsored a conference in London. And Janet Yellen went, head of the Federal Reserve, as did Secretary Jack Lew, and the top equivalent British officials. And what they practiced for on November 10th was a cyber attack upon banks that collapsed a lot of the banks. They didn't say all the banks. They said a lot of the banks. We don't know the results of this, and I believe the test was 2 days. And this is in response to what they were basically preparing for. We are already at war. When you look at this map, you look at these little tracer lights that come across, and they go to a city, and you can see it light up. It's almost like we're being hit by nuclear bombs when you look at this map. It is. There's cyber attacks. And I would estimate in any minute we were looking at 30 cyber attacks in the United States. That means about one every 2 seconds. That's what I was witnessing on this site. Now, this site is proprietary. It's secret. And the average person can't get on it. And I could not get on it myself right now without his help. But he wanted me to see. He said, this is connected to threatening you. He said, you've hit a couple of home runs in what you've written. And he said, and they're trying to intimidate you. And he said, I want to show you what's going on with the computers and the financial institutions in this country. He said, it's all part of the same thing. He said, you're getting the propaganda end. He said, and here's the computer hacking end. And he said that they're preparing to try to take us down, and we're using everything we can do to fight back. And I said, so where does it lead? He said, if there's a big breach in our banking system, he said it could cause a big problem with our economy, and he said it could put us into instant economic collapse and martial law, but he also said it would trigger the Third World War. He said that'll take you to DEFCON 4 right away. He said we've rehearsed it.
So we are being softened up in the cyber venue, in the cyber arena. We're being softened up right now by probing attacks from Russia. Is that what you're – is that
– Russia – primarily China first. Russia's a close second. And the United States is fighting back. I mean, we are doing our thing, too. And there were attacks out of places like Brazil. The BRICS are involved, South Africa. It was really interesting to look at the map because I could really see the BRICS and these coordinated attacks towards the United States. And I recognized the pattern very quickly because, you know, the ones in China and Russia were centralized. Everything in Russia came out of Moscow. In China, the attacks came from about 7 or 8 different locations, but the same geographic part of the country, which was located in the eastern part of the country. Not in their major city areas like Beijing or Hong Kong, but if they were located in the eastern part, quite frankly, in provinces I'm not sure I could even pronounce. But that's where the attacks were headed from, are emanating from. But then you'd see little tracer lights coming out of Brazil, out of South Africa. A couple of them came out of North Korea. It was really interesting to watch this because you could kind of see the forces of the world, the way they've lined up, the BRICS versus NATO. You could see a lot of this. Now, it's kind of interesting that the Europeans weren't getting hit that much. It was mostly the United States. We were getting blasted. And I can't emphasize that. And so I was shown this to basically say that this is what you step in the middle of. And when you're talking about war preparations, and if you get a couple of these things right, he said, this is why the Russian media is attacking you. This is why they're trying to discredit you and why they're trying to tie you up. Now I have the perfect antidote for these people now. When they write into my website or my email and I read the first few words, delete. Next one, delete. I'm not getting myself locked up in their battles. I'm not giving them any attention, but I am going on the offensive in the morning is I'm going to prepare a history of Dave Hodges versus the Russian media because they need to be exposed. People think that Russia Today and Voice of Russia and Pravda and TASS and all these groups, oh, they're just fine. No, they're controlled by Putin, and Putin is not your friend. You don't have to like your government to fear Putin. Putin wants to bury you. And, Doug, I'm telling you, we are in a lot of danger in this country. We have so many ways that we could fall right now, I can't even begin to count them all. It's not a matter if our economy comes down. It's a matter of which avenue is going to take us down. So people better get ready. They better get ready spiritually. They better start prepping, and they better start communicating with their neighbors, because you can't defend your property by yourself.
Wow. That is a program in and of itself, the preparation aspect. And, of course, we have to reach out to our neighbors. Those of you who live in areas where you have neighbors, have close people live in your building or nearby or within your mobile home park, whatever your circumstance, we have to prepare for that. But, you know, we've witnessed, Joe and I have witnessed here, this deification of Putin by people who are really so far against Obama that they're deifying Putin and saying he, he's a Christian. He's not, he's a great leader. He's respected. And there's this murkiness to this process, you know, but you said it best. You don't have to, how did you say that? You don't have to,
you don't have to like Obama to fear Putin.
Thank you. Thank you for saying
that. Yeah, that's how I feel. Listen, there are two peas in a pod, but Obama is our guy. And no, I don't trust him going into war, but the bottom line is we are still Americans. And when the Russian tanks come rolling down the road, You better decide very quickly that they're not here to help you. You can go Russian flag all you want and have Putin's picture in your living room. And the bottom line is they're going to take you out because you're an American. They're going to take your resources even if they let you live. Now, let me talk about the organizational pattern. This is something that I've received some scrutiny on, and I think it's well-deserved scrutiny, but I encourage people to do their own research. What I've been able to determine by talking to my sources and following a paper trail as best I can, the entire problem here in the world that's led to the world condition, right now we've only been focused on the symptoms in our discussion. I'm going to try to get down to some of the root causes. And one of the root causes is I don't think people understand how banking is organized on the planet. And everybody thinks, you know, the Federal Reserve, the other central banks, they're the pinnacles of power. No, they're not. They're mid-level managers. The pinnacle power in this world, on this planet, with regard to banking, is loosely organized and centralized around the Bank of International Settlement. It would be a mistake to say that they're the crown jewel, but if you're looking for a place of geography, a coalescence of financial activity and financial direction for the central banks under their control, it's a good place to start. And yes, the old familiar names are there, Rothschilds, Rockefellers, the Lee family in China, and Oppenheimers. They're the ones that get thrown into this. But I've been told there is even a deeper power, much bigger than these people, much more powerful, but very, very silent, that these are kind of the faces of the upper pinnacle of the banking system. They set the tone for the central banks. And what they did back in the 90s was they used their influence and power to get the U.S. Congress to repeal Glass-Steagall. This was really the undoing of the United States. Glass-Steagall was put into play in 1933 because we had a huge depression because the banks were so stupid that they allowed themselves to get leveraged into the stock market and into bad housing bubble inflation schemes. And when one of those things went down, the whole economy came down like a house of cards, as we know. Well, Congress and President Roosevelt very astutely put in Glass-Steagall, and they created two kinds of banks. One was a brokerage bank, and they could not issue a checkbook, and the other was your friendly, you know, neighborhood bank, and that's where you would store your money, and never the two shall meet. And that worked very well and really kept us out of major depressions until we get into the 1990s, and Bill Clinton, in between his chasing of skirts, comes into office, and they use him and their influence in Congress to effectively undo Glass-Steagall with a series of legislative actions. They didn't actually physically repeal the act, but they neutered it by passing other legislation. So then what we had was the stage was set for the credit swap derivatives. And this is the creation of Basel, and I've been able to source this through many different people. The credit swap derivatives did not originate on Wall Street. It came to us from the foreign banking cartel, and it went out to all the central banks of modern nations in Europe, United States, and around the planet. And the way that the credit swap derivatives work, they did two things. And this is what really bankrupted the world. And when I go through this and talk about some of the numbers, you're going to see very quickly that there is no recovery from this. Gerald Celente is exactly right. There is no way to bounce back from this debt. So let me explain. Right. Credit swap derivatives work in many, many different ways, but I'll use the two most popular. One is I sell a cow to customer number one for $5. But I say, look, in the futures market, you can turn around and you can sell that cow for $100. And then that third person says you can sell this $100 cow for $1 million. But to have these kinds of transactions in these brokerage houses, they require the underwriting of basically the loans by the banks. And this is where the Goldman Sachs, the Shearson Lehman's at the time when they started this, the Wells Fargo's, the Bank of America's came in, and they were brought in to provide creditworthiness to use their A credit rating to basically insure this. Now, that was one leg of the credit swap derivatives. So by the time you're done with that scheme, your cow might be selling for $10 million. Well, it's a Ponzi scheme. And like all Ponzi schemes, they eventually roll up, and the only people that make money are the first few that get in. So that was the beginning of the Wall Street collapse in 2008, and we also saw this repeated around the world. But there's another element. And not only did the banks insure these credit swaps, they also came in and they insured the loans. So let's say that by the time you get that cow being worth $1 million, B of A comes in and says, I want to buy insurance, and I want to insure that $1 million cow for $10 million, because they knew they'd get more leverage on that loan as it increased on the futures market. But then Citibank would come in or Chase would come in and say, well, we want to insure that now for $1 billion. And so now you had insurance insuring insurance on the loans. And then he had the bank underwriting. So the whole damn economic system is wrapped up in these credit swap derivatives. Now, this is only two legs, and I could talk, and if we had more time, I'd go into about 10 legs on how this is set up. But people can start to see that this was headed for disaster. Now, the entire value of the planet is estimated to be somewhere between about $69 trillion and about $75 trillion. The credit swap derivatives, because it's money based upon money that doesn't exist, they're just computer digits. The credit swap derivatives on the low end, and I'm talking the real conservatives, the Air America radio personalities, will tell you it's $800 trillion.
Right.
The smart money, I think, is saying it's $1.5 quadrillion. I like to split the baby in half here. Let's say it's $1 quadrillion. Well, that's somewhere around 16 times the entire value of the planet. We couldn't pay off the derivatives debt in the 30th century or the 50th century. We only take in the United States $2 trillion a year, which is exactly what we're spending on our foreign wars of occupation. We have no hope of ever paying this off. Now, let's go back and talk about where this come from. This came out of Basel, the Bank of International Settlements. The brokerage houses connected to the central banks, because, you know, Goldman Sachs may as well be the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve may as well be Goldman Sachs. And all their ancillary corporations were tied into this. The third level of banks after the central banks are B of A, Wells Fargo, Chase, and so forth. And they took into this like crack cocaine. They were addicted to this because they saw the potential for great money if they would get out before the house of cards collapsed, and most of them didn't. Shearson Lehman took a dive. So what ends up happening in 2009? Well, Hank Paulson goes to Congress and tells them, we'll have tanks on the street and we'll have martial law unless you steal the people's money and give it to us because we took the crack cocaine of credit swap derivatives. And this happened all around the planet. This is what's going on in Greece, and the Greeks are on the verge of revolution. This is what's going on in Europe, and the euro is, what, months away from collapse? They have that long. So this has gone on all across the planet, and here's why it was done. This is what I've concluded. When I put all the dots up on the wall and I start connecting the dots and I'm saying, okay, what makes sense here? Well, what do the globalists want? And I'm talking at the upper echelon level. They want 90% of the population to be gone. They want a one world war of unification. And then eventually they want to replace human beings with transhumanism. So let's just focus on the first couple of things. What they have done at Basel is they have put all the central banks in the world on death's ground. That's a Sun Tzu term, meaning that if you put your troops on Omaha Beach with no possibility of escaping, you either fight and win or you die. And this is what they've done to the central banks. The credit swap derivatives have put the central banks on death's ground. This is why the MERS mortgage fraud exists. They're stealing assets from all the people that they can to stay one step ahead of the burning bridge. Then they've got the bail-ins that are coming. They've got more bailouts that are coming. And when you run out of stealing from your people, when you reach the point where the people aren't going to take it anymore, you really want to allocate resources to have a civil war, to fight a civil war, to have martial law, it's easier to look to your neighbors. That's when your wars of foreign conquest begin, because now you have to go steal other people's stuff, and you do it through war and conflict. And this is really what underlies what's going on today. Who's going to persevere? Which central bank, using the military of their home country, is going to persevere in the coming Third World War? Meanwhile, the bankers at the upper level have played everybody else to get the world right where they want it, on the verge of World War III, with mass extermination, and out of chaos will come order, and we'll have a new world order coming out of the Third World War. And then Steve Quayle has written about this quite eloquently. When you read about what they want to do once they have control of this planet, the human race will cease to exist, because that'll be the introduction of transhumanism.
Wow. And that's how everything fits together. I mean, that I don't think you can be much more clear than that, Dave. And it's, well, Joe, you're going to say something.
No, I said excuse me.
Okay. Yeah. So we're at the precipice here of World War III. Maybe it's better to say we're already involved in World War III, just without the bullets and bombs, at least domestically here.
Well, we're seeing it. I mean, we've got proxy forces fighting each other in Kiev. You've got academia involved there, which is, you know, the former Blackwater. And you've got the Russian proxy forces. They're engaging.
We may not have. I mean, if we go back to the Arab Spring, Putin said, "Don't do this. You know, don't be crazy with what you're doing. You know, you're looking at the Obama Muslim Brotherhood redefining borders and countries and taking out people in the Middle East, affecting Russia essentially in many respects.
You know, Russia
and even before that,
making nuclear military agreements. You have the Iranian buildup of on northern Israel, threatening to invade Israel. I mean, we're talking about the, as you said, the 3D chessboard, the prepositioning of assets, of military might, even from power to the projection of power for World War III. And Israel's involved, and we see as Iran made a deal, with Russia, for a military pact. What do you expect to see out of this agreement they made? Do you see an attack on Israel? Is this a move to get Israel to make a move preemptively?
Or, yeah, what's next?
Well, I think eventually Gog and Magog will come into play. I there's no question about that. I think the original, the conflict for World War III will start in Syria, and I think you guys nailed it when you first exposed the ISIS threat and how it's spreading across Iraq and crossing the border into Syria. Right now we're seeing a PSYOPs game. I mean, it's the same theme over and over and over in the media. ISIS captures somebody to behead them. Chapter 2, ISIS captures somebody and graphically beheads them. And the horror and shock is spread throughout the media, and we're being psychologically prepared to go to war. And ISIS is going to be the gateway into that war. And I think you guys nailed it when you exposed ISIS last year. And who created ISIS? Here's the thing that you never have explained in the media. We just woke up one day and there was ISIS. No, what happened was, against military protocols, we left behind sophisticated military weaponry. And somehow these band of whoever's, what are they, Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, they were just gathering at 7-Eleven and found American weapons. I mean, where the hell did they come from? And they just all of a sudden become this magical army. No, they're CIA trained. The CIA blocked the military, and by executive order, I'm sure, secret executive order by Obama, stopped our troops from destroying weapons in a theater of war as they were withdrawing, as is the protocol. And this was done on purpose to create the boogeyman in the Middle East that'll be the gateway to war. And what we're waiting for right now, all the forces of war are lined up. I wrote an article last week. I compared World War I to what's going on now. We have rival alliances. We are fighting for resources in basically a crude form of colonization. We have all the elements they had in World War I. The only thing that's missing is we don't have our Archduke Francis Ferdinand moment yet. That's waiting to happen. Will it be the cyber attack that brings down the banks that triggers World War III? Because we will go after Russia. If they take down our banks, those silos will become active and those missiles will be launched. I mean, I can guarantee you that, and every military person I've talked to said the same thing. That would be the extreme act of war. Yet when I saw this cyber map today and I saw these attacks taking place, it scared the living crap out of me, because I knew I understood what I was looking at. So this is where I see things headed, guys. We're just waiting for the right spark.
Interesting. And for listeners, and I want to thank all of the listeners, we had several dozen actually send us a link to, I believe it is Norse IP Viking. It's a website where, perhaps not the same one that you looked at, but it's a website where you can map cyber attacks, where you can see the cyber attacks happening in real time.
Can you say that again? Because I'm not familiar with that site.
It's Norse IP Viking Live. And we have a link to it on our homepage. It's the first story up there. It's map.ipviking.com. If you go to hagmanhagman.com, just click on the image.
I sent it to you, Dave.
Yeah. And for listeners, just go to hagmanhagman.com. Click on the image there. It'll bring up the post for today, and it says click here. You click there, it'll take you to a new window or a new tab, and you'll see if it doesn't crash your computer, because it's active. I mean, it's like a wow. I've never seen anything like this before. And thank you for listeners for all of the emails that you sent. But yeah, interesting indeed. The attack origins, the country, and right now Russia is up front, followed by China, Taiwan, U.S. military/governments, live attacks with timestamps, attack types, which are the various different types of attacks and attack targets. The one of the biggest ones is the U.S., and the second followed by Russia. So, interesting.
Interesting. I'm getting ready to pull that up right now because I want to see how it compares to what I saw. What I was told is what I looked at today was proprietary. I think I've seen the site you're talking about. I just need to look at it.
Yeah, there are several different sites out there that do relatively the same thing, but this by far appears to be the most popular among listeners. And again, thank you, Kevin. Thank you. Well, thank you, everybody. I'm not going to name everyone, but thank you for sending that. But Davey mentioned something here that I think it's important for people to really hone in on. People are getting, well, they know something is terribly, terribly wrong. They feel things are terribly wrong. You had Obama stand up last night at the State of the Union. Of course, we had, and I've got to mention this, you had an illegal alien as a guest of honor. The guest of honor should have been perp walked out of the Capitol building in front of the renegade in chief, the vice renegade in chief, and the ineffective Speaker of the House, and all of those in presence there. And they should have arrested her, put her in cuffs, and taken her out, because we've got a felon there, sitting there in the Capitol. We can take this in several directions. This is a period of lawlessness. This is a period of spiritual, it's a period of immorality. We are morally bankrupt as a country. And your article, folks, go to thecommonsenseshow.com. It's linked off of HagmanHagman.com, but go to his website. Take a look. The one in particular, the article that kind of propelled everyone here to this conversation, propelled you to this conversation, and correct me if I'm wrong, on your website, is the Americans at Risk, Obama is destroying America's inability to, or America's ability to win World War III. That's kind of, you springboarded from that article into the show. Is that a fair statement, the article you wrote yesterday?
Yeah, it's one of them. I'm on that site right now.
Yes.
And I'm looking at it. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar in concept. And what you could do on the site I was on, that I can't see you can do here. You can blow up the country to see the details of where these attacks are hitting.
Right.
The map is more sophisticated I was looking at, but the concept is the same. I didn't know this was this is interesting. This is interesting to me. I think people need to be watching this, because I'm watching this unfold right now, guys, and I'm seeing similar things to what I saw.
St. Louis seems to be one of the targeted locations, according to this website,
yeah.
As you stated to me before the show.
I saw that I saw that today, too. St. Louis and Dallas were huge.
Wow.
Yeah, it was interesting. Not exactly the same, but similar in concept. Boy, this is where did this come from? Do you know who the originators of this are? Because I have a theory.
No, actually, this was just sent to us by somebody in their chat room posted it, and somebody else sent it to us via email simultaneously. And it's the first time we're seeing it.
Maybe that a whole bunch of people. At least I've got on the studio here that sent this to us. It is kind of unnerving if you look at this. It almost think back to what was that the movie with Matthew Broderick, War Games or whatever. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Man,
yeah, you get enthralled in this. But no, it's not exactly the same, but it's similar in concept. So, but let me tell you what I learned. Yesterday, I did not know this, but I shouldn't be surprised. There is a parallel internet, but it's not an internet that you and I can access. What I was on today was a parallel internet. I was just told about this yesterday.
Wow.
And I looked at other ancillary things that I'm not supposed to talk about. Let me just leave it at that. It was more than just watching computer hacking. The computer hacking one I was told I could talk about. There's a couple other things I saw, let's just say regarding the military, from different sides that let me know that we're really positioning assets, and that's probably about as far as I should go with it. This is really, wow. I'm looking at this here, and if the general public could just look at what I'm seeing here, this is really a crude version of what I saw, but this is enough to get people's attention. This should be telling people that we're having war waged on the United States right now. These are acts of war that I'm seeing on the screen. And, here it is, the BRIC nations. I'm looking at attack right now out of Brazil. I'm looking at another one out of South Africa, and the BRICS, here we are.
Yeah,
but most of it's coming out of China.
Yeah, it seems. I've been looking at this during our conversation here. It looks like China and Russia seem to be taking the top two positions, sharing the top two positions, followed by number three, the United States, in the attack mode here. So, yeah, there's Brazil. So, yeah, we can. And folks, you can go to HagmanHagman.com, click on the picture, and it'll take you directly to the article that has a link in it. Just click on the link, and it'll take you right to this site that we're talking about. Dave, how far away is this? How far off in the distance? I mean, do we have? I suspect we've got some time to prepare, but like war, we haven't had that moment, as you mentioned, that Archduke of Ferdinand moment that's going to take it into a hot type situation. But we're running out of time, aren't we?
I think we are, but it's kind of a fool's errand to predict because there's nothing symmetrical. This is asymmetrical warfare right now, and because it's asymmetrical, it means your ability to predict the next step of events is difficult to do. I think Gerald Celente has discovered that. He's made some very logical predictions that have not come true. And had we continued in some of the ways that we were going, he would have been exactly right. The economy would have collapsed last year. But some other things have happened. And I'll give you an example of what's happened. The rich kind of ditched some of the more risky investments, and they went into gold. In fact, if you recall, in April of 2013, Goldman Sachs somehow got the idea that they should order their brokers to short sale gold. Hey, get out of gold. It's a bad investment. So people like you and I sold their gold, and the elite came in and bought the gold up at bargain basement prices. And that actually helped economies because they've actually moved some of this gold rather than worthless cash in exchange for goods and services. In fact, India and China and Russia, that little triangular trade they've got going, they do a lot of gold exchange for products. Well, this has kind of saved the world's economy because what you've got right now, because of the bailouts and the central banks cranking up the printing presses to meet the burden of the bailouts, you've got a lot of worthless fiat cash running around out there. And because these countries are using gold in a defensive posture to a large extent, it's limited the amount of fiat cash, and therefore we got borrowed time economically that we ordinarily might not have gotten. So I think Gerald was right. This thing should have come down last year. I think he is totally 100% right. But on the other side of the coin, this can't go on forever because the $1.5 quadrillion derivatives debt is greater than all the gold in the world we can amass. The only way, there's one way out of this, but you really don't get out. You could use the Iceland model. You could jail the bankers. You could repudiate the debt. But then what you'd have is Hank Paulson was somewhat right when he said your financial institutions will crash. And I know Iceland did it, and they survived, and now they've got positive economic growth. But Iceland's a country of only 300,000 people. They don't have the GDP we do. We have an $18 trillion GDP. We're way above Iceland. We can't do what Iceland did without the bottom falling out. We would have a depression that would go on a decade or longer. So there's no real easy way out of it. Now, honestly, our choices here will ultimately become World War III. Our choice will also be just economic collapse, probably into World War III from that, or repudiation of the debt. I would prefer the repudiation of the debt. The problem is the people who are in charge of the government, who run Obama, who run Boehner, they're the ones who the money is owed to. So I doubt that they're going to allow the repudiation of the debt that's owed to them.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Who wants to lose that easy money or the fiat currency?
And with that, Dave, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these short messages. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on this Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. Dave Hodges is our guest. His website is thecommonsenseshow.com. You can go to this commonsenseshow.com or go to HagmanAndHagman.com and click the Circle of Trust link. Dave Hodges is in there. His website, bookmark it. He has a show on Sunday nights, the Common Sense Show. You can get that on iTunes or RSS feed. Definitely recommend that people bookmark that show also and go back and listen. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number two of the Hagman & Hagman Report on this Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. Our guest is Dave Hodges, The Common Sense Show. TheCommonSenseShow.com is his website. The Common Sense Show is his radio show. And this is hour number two, Dave. Let's just pick up where we left off.
Well, I have an update.
Go for it.
I've been communicating with my main source that I was talking to today, and he gave me permission to say this. One of the things that's missing on this cyber attack map that I've seen is these cyber attacks are showing like they're ground-based attacks, and actually a lot of them are initiated by satellite. And what you can do is you can go to one quadrant of the map by clicking something on, and what you'll do is you'll get a three-dimensional view of satellites that are going around the planet, and you'll see that they're triggering a lot of these cyber attacks.
Wow.
And this is what's missing on this map here that you're seeing here. And like I said, that's why I said it was a crude representation. Well, you know, during the break, I was going back and forth in the communication mode with my source, and I asked him, I said, can I mention satellites? He goes, yeah. So the satellite here, these are really satellite-based attacks to a large extent. We know that the Chinese have invested a lot in developing killer satellites. And, of course, there's going to be war fought in space when the Third World War breaks out, but it won't necessarily be a war like, well, think about it. It'll be a war where one satellite attacks another satellite to attack some form of infrastructure, to attack some form of military communications and surveillance, like over-the-horizon radar. But there's going to be a real war going on in space. And I bet you guys remember this. It was, I don't remember the time frame clearly, but maybe 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, that the Chinese took out one of our old decrepit satellites in space just to show that they could do it. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. But one thing that I don't recall is any level of complaints against what they did. At least not in the public.
There were three things that were connected during that time. One was the killer satellite attack on an outdated satellite that was orbiting the Earth from the U.S. And it was a show of force. The other thing that the Chinese did at that time is they were able to show that they could jam our satellite surveillance signals, and they had a submarine surface in the middle of a carrier task force in the Pacific, and the commander of the task force was promptly fired. Like somehow the inability of this country to keep up with Chinese technology was his fault, but they had to have a scapegoat, and he was fired. And then the third thing that happened was a Chinese submarine surfaced in the middle of San Francisco Harbor. And those three things happened in proximity to each other. And what it was the Chinese were saying, this is a new game, and we can play the same game that you can play now.
You know what? This was almost 8 years to the day. I just found some information about this. China destroyed, well, they successfully carried out their first test of one of their own anti-satellite weapons. It was the first week of January, or second week of January, in 2007. So we're going on 8 years. And what they did, or what this was they were signaling its resolve to play a major role in military space activities, and bringing expressions of concern from Washington and other capitals is what happened. But up until that point, only two countries, the U.S. and in Russia, previously destroyed spacecraft in anti-satellite tests, and that happened before 2007, back in the mid-1980s. So this was definitely an escalation. Wow. And then you mentioned the submarine coming up in the on the West Coast. I do recall that. And didn't we have a missile being fired or something going on with that?
I don't recall that. But, you know, these events, so much that happens, you know, memory is fallible. But I remember the one that really impressed me was not the San Francisco Harbor incident. It was the one where the submarine surfaced in the middle of the carrier task force.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
That was the big one that got that was even bigger to me than the carrier task force, because that meant that the Chinese sub had achieved a level of stealth that was beyond our satellite communication ability to detect it. Now, how it was done to us, it was never revealed, so we can only speculate. I suspect it had something to do with neutralizing the satellite signal that was responsible for surveillance. You know, I don't think that they've got some kind of cloaking device, which would be presumably your other option. I think it was more like interfering with a satellite signal, somehow trapping it and sending back a false signal. That would be my guess on what they did. But I thought it was really unfortunate because they fired – I don't remember the man's name, but I remember reading his Navy bio. This guy was a man's man. I mean, he was a real soldier. He did not deserve to lose his command because our technology had not kept up with the Chinese in that area. I mean, he lost his command, and it was big. I think we only had at the time 8 commanders on his level, so this was a big deal. This was like firing Captain Kirk at the Starship Enterprise. I mean, that's what I remember thinking to myself. And let me tell you and tell the listening audience why this is an important event. The Chinese brag that they can put 100 million men on the battlefield. Obama's effectively taking our fighting force down to 420,000 men. The only way that we can combat the Chinese in a theater of war is to have superior surveillance and detection capability with smart weapons or satellite-based. If you neutralize the satellites, it's mano-mano, and we will get crushed by the sheer numbers of the Chinese. So this is why this is such a big deal.
Well, indeed, and you write about that. You touch on that in your article that you posted yesterday, and you've been on the forefront of the purge, general purge. In the event people are looking for information about the Chinese sub, the incident that Dave Hodges is referring to, it was back in November of 2007, a good 8 months, 9 months after the other incident we spoke of with regard to the satellite, and that was when the Chinese sub popped up next to the Kitty Hawk or within close proximity to the Kitty Hawk. Man, a 1,000-foot supercarrier, 4,500 people on board that ship, and the sub was a Song-class diesel-electric attack submarine. Man, okay. But there was a lot of, I mean, during the Clinton administration, didn't we not give a lot of technology away to the Chinese?
I think it was just the opposite. I recall, I think it was in the re-election. I think it was the 96 re-election of Clinton. Al Gore was implicated in arranging technological transfer involving some missile system, and I don't remember which one now, and in exchange for diverted cash payments to the Democratic Party. And by diverted, I mean from one shell corporation to another, making it difficult to trace. It actually made the mainstream media for a while. Nothing came of it, but it actually made the mainstream media. Did Al Gore really sell military secrets so he could be reelected the vice president and propel him into the presidential race in 2000? That actually was the story that came out in the mainstream media. I think, was it Silkworm? I don't remember. I don't remember the kind of missile now. I mean, someone's going to know and they're going to send me an email, but it's been too many years. But I would say that I think that was like 95.
Okay.
So, gosh, we're going back now 20 years.
So this has been in the works for decades. I mean, all of this, setting the stage for where we're at today, has been in the works for quite some time. Chinese, Russia, the entire... And, you know, people think, and it's amazing to me when people kind of sit back in their chair and say, well, look, we don't have to worry about Russia. The Cold War is over. And I've heard this repeated of late. Russia poses no threat to the United States. The United States is not, prodding and poking Russia. Man, I'll tell you, the information that's out there that people are unwilling to digest, unwilling to confront, is just amazing. I'm going to go back, though, Dave, to what you said initially when you came on the program here. You're being really attacked, targeted, a vicious attack or vicious attacks against you by TASS, among others, but you mentioned TASS specifically. What's behind TASS? I mean, the Russian news agency, the telegraph agency of the Soviet Union, what's their role in this aside... What's her role in this, to attack you specifically in this case right now? I mean, I'd like to get a little more into the – let's make it a little bit personal here with respect to TASS. What's going on?
I think I'm a conduit of opportunity for propaganda more than it is a personal attack upon Dave Hodges. Either way, I'm still not going to tolerate it. What I'm looking at here, in my humble opinion, is the fact that that Putin has got a cult following. I'm not going to get into mudslinging here, but there's a prominent website out there with a popular media personality who champions Russia, who champions Putin, and he's the answer against the Zionist Jewish conspiracy, quote unquote, and that Putin could save us from the New World Order. And that's such a load of crap. I mean, Putin deals in oil and gold. I mean, whose oil and gold do you think he got it from? He's controlled by the Bank of International Settlements, the same as every other leader on this planet.
Right.
But nonetheless, when we look at this situation, the Russians are living off this propaganda. They love to undermine us. I think some of the people who wrote to me aren't Russian media. I think a lot of them are. But I think some of these people are actually Americans who are drinking from the Putin Kool-Aid. And I think Putin's this wonderful leader. He's a Christian. He's anti-gay. He's anti-Muslim. I mean, any theme that could get any traction with the American public, Putin has been associated with. I mean, God, if you believe the media, I mean, Putin's more American than American leaders, the way that they're portraying him. And it's all really a facade. I mean, Putin is ex-KGB. He's ex-Russian mafia. He's implicated in wife-beating, philandering. And this is from the East German Stasi reports on the man going back several years. His wife has left him. And I don't mean to demean the guy for the sake of demeaning him, but we're not looking at a Christian. This man is not a Christian. He's a wolf, in sheep's clothing. And the Russian, right now, propaganda machine is using me because I've addressed some of these central issues. I don't think they think they can silence me, but they're using me as a conduit to basically further their propaganda and make some of the people who drink from the Putin Kool-Aid grow to undermine the morale and faith and confidence that we have in each other as Americans. That's my operating hypothesis, and I'm pretty confident in this hypothesis. Now, is it just singling out Dave Hodges for Dave Hodges' sake? No. No, because I'm not the only one who believes these things, and I'm not the only one who's writing these things. So that's what I think is going on, Doug. I think that I'm just an opportunity victim. You know, wrong place, wrong time, and that's why they're coming after me.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. I think that your position, and I really, going back to your interview, you're indeed a target, a magnet for these targets, and I can see why. To what extent is energy. Now, we talked about the gas prices. We talked about the prices of oil. Obviously, low oil prices, low gas prices, they don't, Russia does not benefit by this. We see the existing pipelines. We see that Putin's role in Gazprom. We understand all that, if anything, the high oil prices will benefit Russia's monopoly or the Gazprom. So this Saudi Arabia has got to figure in here. OPEC has got to figure in here as being tools of the United States or extensions of the United States, saying this CIA. This is an asymmetrical attack against Russia. Would it not be? I mean, bottom line.
So this is retaliation for the attack on the petrodollar.
Right.
And it's retaliation for the stalemate in Ukraine. I think what we're looking at here, well, let's back up. I mean, I don't think, I noticed for a fact. When we, our oil, I hate to say our oil companies, when the oil companies obtain gas from the Middle East, they obtain oil, they don't buy it from the governments. It's not government regulated. It's sheik regulated. It's royal print regulated. Aramco made this deal. Gosh, I have to go back and look at my historical notes, but I want to say it was in the 1930s where the oil companies made deals with the various leaders of the Middle East to come in and take their oil. Now, the people don't benefit. I mean, the people live at the poverty level in the Middle East, but the leaders of these countries are among the richest men in the world because they're the ones that are selling the oil to the oil companies, and they sell it at really low prices. And it's even worth the cost to ship it across the ocean and refine it here because they get it at such bargain basement prices that they love the arrangement. This is why we don't have the Keystone Pipeline, because the Keystone Pipeline would directly compete with lower oil prices than what we get out of the Middle East, because it'd be domestic, it'd be voluminous, and the more of a product you have, the more you drive down the price, so supply and demand would drive the price down. Obama will never budge on the Keystone Pipeline despite congressional legislation because he's in the hip pocket of David Rockefeller and the oil companies. We'll never see the development of oil on the North Shore of Alaska for exactly the same reason. So this is about oil, and you've touched on this with your question. This is about controlling the price of oil. Now, the oil companies are taking a hit right now, but it's kind of like you have new competition that's moved into the neighborhood. So what you do as a company, you lower your prices, and you'll take a loss because you know you can outlast the other guy. This is what Standard Oil used to do to its competitors back in the 1880s and 1890s, and this is partially what led to the Sherman Antitrust Act, which was ineffective. And this is what's going on today. The oil people who are attacking the Eastern establishment, the Putin establishment, are basically lowering the price of oil and squeezing Putin really hard. And it's not a complicated thing to understand. We'll never see it in the mainstream media, Doug, but this is exactly what's going on. So I'm gonna just change gears for a second too.
Sure,
we lost a point that I wanted to make earlier, and I'm sorry for the stream of consciousness, but I want to reveal something on your show, and I've talked about it on my own show before. But you know, I have really good sources, and I wanted to give credit where credit is due. Now, I can't talk about some of my current sources. I can't reveal whether they're one of the 260 that were fired or what circumstances I came to know them and things like that, because it would reveal identities. And I know Doug and Joe, you both know how this game works. You know, you've got to be really, really careful. But I can go back in past, and people say, okay, where did these sources and your knowledge come from? I get this a lot. People think, well, I get accused a lot, by the way, of being a CIA creation that just popped up out of nowhere. I didn't pop up out of nowhere. Just a little bit of a biography. I grew up in a family where my dad was naval intelligence. He was in charge. His last duty in the Navy, one of his last duties, was in charge with an admiral, his best friend, of putting or rewiring the Combat Information Center on the carrier Roosevelt to accept the first nuclear weapons in the Navy on a ship. That was a big deal then, a very big deal. They sailed around Cape Horn, because this is the days before satellite technology, to escape detection and surveillance from the Soviet Union. They didn't want the Soviets to know what they were doing. This was a big deal. When he was done with this, my dad was actually put out of the Navy 6 months early, but they gave him a full retirement, and they sent him to Martin Marietta in the mountains outside Littleton, Colorado. And at the time, you know, because my dad had been away on the ship for just the better part of a year, our family was in Iowa. I was living with my grandparents, and we relocated to Denver where I grew up. My dad worked at Martin Marietta, and he worked with German scientists who had been captured after World War II, and a couple of Russians as well. And my dad was chosen because my dad's side of the family is from Germany. He was fluent German, and he understood the culture and so forth. And so he worked on a lot of different stuff. Let me tell you what he shared with me, and this goes back to what we talked about earlier with the satellites in space. The years, gosh, what would have been, late 50s, early 60s. I suppose I should say, people call this Operation Paperclip. He never referred to this. He never talked to me about this until the last 2 years of his life, when he had a fatal lung disease, and I used to visit him every night, and he started telling me stuff he did. So I didn't pop up out of nowhere, because this information has been known to me since the mid-80s. We used to get the FBI or the Secret Service investigations into our family's whereabouts and what we've been talking about every 6 months from the time that my dad did this work. And I had to make sure he wasn't talking. And when my dad told me these things in the 80s, he knew he wasn't going to be here long, but he had a pension from the Navy. And he also got a pension from working at Martin Marietta, and he said he would have lost both of them because both included a security clearance. And his oath basically said if it was revealed that he ever talked about classified information in a way that could be damaging to the security of the United States, that, number one, he could have gone to prison in Leavenworth without a trial, kind of the early version of the NDAA, hard labor, forfeiture of all assets. What he was worried about, and why I never talked about this for a long time, he was worried about the fact that my mom would be left without pension. And he said, you'll be supporting her if you talk. And so I agreed not to talk. Now, I did talk to a couple of people very privately, and I'm going to reveal this now. And I think my news director, Annie DeRiso, is listening. She knows all about this because her ex-significant other, who's now the late Bill Pollack, Bill passed away about 5 years ago, he was ex-CIA. He knew my dad. They had actually worked together. My dad left Martin Marietta at a place called Sunstrand Electronics where they were working on high-level satellite technology. My dad's background was in electrical and mechanical engineering professionally. And they worked there. Bill knew of my dad, and I met Bill through Vance Davis, who was ex-NSA. And I told both of them in a closed-door meeting what I knew. Well, they arranged, Bill arranged a private meeting between myself and Jim Mars, because as you guys know, Jim Mars has written a lot on this extensively.
Yes.
And they said, Jim is good, Jim won't reveal. And this was, oh gosh, probably about 4 years before my mom passed away. Jim flew into Phoenix just to meet me. We went out for lunch, spent about 4 hours together. And I gave him pretty much everything that I had. And I'm going to reveal some of that here, but it's not secret. My mom passed 3 years ago, all restrictions are off. I mean, the government can't touch me legally, and they can't touch my sister legally. So I'm able to reveal what it is I've known, and I've been pretty open about it. One of the things that my father learned as a result of his work is something that a lot of people have talked about, and it's true. We had a secret space program. We had NASA, that was for the public, and we had the military program, that was for the military. And we've done a lot of things out there, at least in near space orbit, that the general public doesn't know. We've done these tests. I don't know if you've ever seen the videos on the SDS-48, the SDS-72, where it looks like you have two craft fighting against each other with laser beam weapons. That's actually made its way some into the mainstream media, and they ran it on shows like Sightings and Years Gone By. Well, that's real stuff. That's our stuff. Some of that gets presented as it's extraterrestrial. It's our stuff, and a lot of it I've been told, I was told by my dad, that was war games. And
wow.
So going forward with this, when we talk about the Third World War, just based on what I knew from my father's work and what he revealed to me and what Jim Mars has shared with me along with Vance Davis and Bill Pollack, is that we are probably going to have some form of military conflict and war. My dad didn't know for sure, but he was pretty sure, based on some of the direction of the technology that he was working on with Germans, that we probably were building deep space platforms back in the 1960s and arming them with nuclear weapons. Today, I would suspect we're arming them also with satellite killer technologies, and they are the source of some of these hackings that we're seeing, and I saw the proof of that today. So I kind of like went full circle with my knowledge of my father's work. And probably right now, my news director, Annie DeRiso, is probably smiling from ear to ear because she knows every word. She's known this stuff for years, as has Vance Davis and as did Bill. So this brings us kind of to where I think World War III could possibly go. I don't know that the war is going to be won here on the planet Earth. I think it's going to be won in near space orbit. I think he who controls outer space and the satellites and who has weaponized space the best, I think they're the ones that are going to win the Third World War. I mean, if you look at the Air Force, guys, and I know you guys know this, you have a division inside the Air Force that gets no attention, but it's the National Space Command. And I might be butchering the name, but you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, my dad had a hand in that. He knew all about that. In fact, after he actually retired and wasn't in good health, he was actually brought in as a consultant for some of this work. Some of the things they worked on with the Germans, vertical liftoff craft. And I would say the way it was described to me, kind of like UFOs from the old grade B science fiction movies. And my dad said the way that we'll escape Earth velocity, and he said we probably already have it, and he told me this in the 80s, is we won't use jet propulsion rockets, three-stage rockets, that we'll just use gravitational fields. And this is what the Germans were working on at the end of World War II with things like the Nazi Bell and some of the other craft. And Jim Mars has written a lot about this, and this is really what attracted Jim to my dad's work and why he wanted answers. But they were working on vertical takeoff craft. They were using the power of magnetic fields. The way that we'll supposedly travel between the planets is to use the magnetic forces out there to propel us at near light speed. I mean, this is stuff now that's starting to come out in quantum physics. But this was stuff that we were working on, and I can tell you for a fact we were working on this back in the early 60s. Now, to those people that think I'm some kind of CIA creation that just appeared out of nowhere, no, my dad kept me out of the Naval Academy. I was recruited by Senator Gary Hart and his staff to apply for a naval appointment to the academy because, like father, like son. And you guys know how this game works. If your dad's in intelligence and if the son shows any academic prowess or intelligence, they go after the son. And this is what they did with me. And my dad put his foot down and he said, no and hell no, we're not going to do this. And he said, I want your life to belong to you, not to the government. And he said, I made terrible sacrifices. And he said, I think I hurt my time with my family. And he really stepped in and says, no, you will not do this. So I became a regular college student. I played basketball. I had a normal life. I became a coach. I became a college basketball coach. And I loved it. Now, the reason reason I eventually left college basketball coaching. One is because, you know, I started to age and it's difficult to keep up that pace. But the other reason, the main reason why, is I had moved into what my wife and I were calling our future retirement home. And we lived in, we moved to the country about 20, 25 miles north of metropolitan Phoenix. No streetlights, wonderful area, great neighbors, and all hell broke loose. John McCain, who was the co-sponsor of the Central American Free Trade Agreement, wanted to put a CAFTA highway through our area and grab our water. And we were sitting on the state's largest underground water aquifer. And they did everything they could do by using the local state legislature to force our neighbors off our land. This is how I got into broadcasting. I was really furious. They said, first of all, we were in the way of Luke Air Force Base. Well, Luke is 30 miles to the south of us. And those planes, who they said we were interfering in their training activities, have to fly over 250,000 people to reach us. So we knew that was bullcrap. And then we found there were four areas in the state that all had the same things in common: a military base to subjugate property rights in some proximity, underground water, and desires to put in a future Canamex corridor, which is an international highway system that was to be the highway system of the North American Union. Well, this is how I got involved in media. You know, I'm out here, and basically my life savings is tied up in this new house, and I'm facing economic ruin. They passed restrictions that we couldn't get a permit to build anything, and they weren't going to compensate us. There was no eminent domain. It was just get the hell off your property and do what's good for the common good. In fact, I even had meetings with the local major media in Phoenix, like the Arizona Republic Editorial Board. I went through, and I made all these constitutional arguments, and the head of the editorial board leaned forward, and she said, well, that's all real good, Mr. Hodges. You're correct. But you know what? Just for the greater good, that's a communist term, you need to get off your land. Well, I fought this battle for 8 years. And in those 8 years, I did find some stations and outlets that would interview me. The Clear Channels wouldn't touch me, of course. The major media owned by McGraw-Hill, they wouldn't touch me. But I did get on enough stations. Kind of interesting. This is how I got into broadcasting. There's a small community of about 7,000 to 8,000 people, some about 15, 20 miles north of me. And the late Pete Peterson had a station up there in a town called Wickenburg, Arizona. And I was on his show 3 times. And he loved me because I recruited a kid to play college basketball for me out of that small town. Ended up being a terrific player. And so he kept having me on the show to talk about John McCain and what a robber baron he is and so forth and so on. Well, anyway, the Libertarians eventually came to my rescue, coincided with me getting a radio show offer from Pete Peterson. So I started broadcasting out of Wickenburg, and I was doing local, and eventually we had 6 stations pick us up. So my show, my one-hour show on Sunday afternoons, got syndicated. And then Pete decided he wanted to race quarter horses late in his life, and he sold the station, and I moved on to another network. And I was at that network for 6 years. That's how I came to be in the media. I had no intention of ever doing broadcasting or writing, but I fell into it because I was fighting for my own economic survival. And as I discovered the North American Union, I started finding out the stuff about the New World Order and some of the things that my dad and I talked about. He told me how dirty the CIA was, and they ran drug trafficking rings and so forth, child sex slavery. I mean, I heard this stuff back in the 80s. For my own father as a result of his work in naval intelligence, and he had bumped up against some of this stuff. So this is not new stuff for me. This is stuff I had, but I was living a life. I mean, I enjoyed my life. I loved coaching. I loved the teaching that I was doing. I didn't need this to make my life exciting, but I had to get into this, number one, because I had to survive economically on a personal level, but number two, on a professional level, I started looking at my country, and at the time, my son was probably about, 6, 7 years old. And I said, he's got no future. My nephews and nieces, they have no future with what's going on. And the more I learned, the worse I realized it was. And so I decided to become a one-man wrecking crew. And you notice in my writing, I don't take any prisoners.
No, you don't.
I said, if I was going to do this, I'm going to do this for real.
Wow. Okay. So, folks, you just heard the very important background, the really very transparent overview of the life of Dave Hodges, how he came to be in the position that where he's at now. And you and I, and we spoke about this on air and off air, about the fight that you had to keep your home. My goodness, the people that are supposed to be allied with us are trying to take your home away from you, your property, without any type of compensation, just unceremoniously take it away from you. And you stepped up and you said, no, absolutely not. And I think that I certainly admire you for doing that and for really bucking the system as you did.
Well, it wasn't just me. I learned to get allies. And not all people in government are bad. And I think that people need to hear this. I took my fight to the Arizona legislature, and when I'm backed into a corner, I can be fairly ferocious, and I was. But I also started to find that there were some people down there that didn't really fully understand what they were doing to us until I sat down and talked to them individually. And so, you know, I met people that were just wonderful in the state legislature that actually stepped up and started to help us behind the scenes. And then when they felt it was politically safe, they came out. They started killing bills in committee that would take our property away, and they would let me know when something was coming so I could head it off in the media. And then basically these people rose up and said, enough's enough. But what the real trigger point was this, and I owe Ernie Hancock, who was then the chair of the Libertarian Party in Maricopa County, we couldn't get lawyers to represent us. I'd go to a lawyer, and I'd sit down, and I'd say, here's our case. Oh, my gosh, Dave, for $100,000, we're going to get your people $2 million. These people are crazy. How do they think they can get away with this? And then the name John McCain surfaced, and they dropped us like a hot potato because lawyers want to become judges, and McCain's influential. potential, and we couldn't get people in the area. I mean, we went as far away as Colorado and Nevada to try to get legal representation, and these people wouldn't touch us. Well, a real turning point came. Ernie approached me. Oh, I don't remember the year, what, 2008 maybe? Yeah, that's when things started to turn. And Ernie approached me, and he said, Dave, we lost our candidate to run for office for the county superintendent of education. I said, Ernie, I'm not a politician, and you of all people know me. I tell it like it is. I can't play those games. And he said, I'm going to make you a deal. I got friends at the Goldwater Institute who owe me favors. He said, you do this. He said, I'm going to see what we can do to turn the screws to get the Goldwater Institute to represent you. And the Goldwater Institute's a public interest law firm, and if they agree to take your case, and they take about one out of every 10,000 that come their way, but if they agree to take your case, they're really talented, they're very good, and they agreed with some arm twisting from my friends, the Libertarian Party. Sheriff Mack helped me out with this because he and Ernie were good friends at the time and hung out a lot together. So I had some really powerful people here in the Libertarians, and also some Republicans stepped up to help me too. And as these people stepped up, the Goldwater Institute took notice. And even though it was an unpopular case in the mainstream media, they got vilified. Oh, you're working against the Air Force Base, even though that was never the issue. They took some hits. Well, they filed a lawsuit, and on the steps of the courthouse, the other side backed down. And that they've left us alone since that time. Every now and then, we think they're going to pull something, but it's pretty much been we have our lives, and we can do what we want with our properties now. But it was sure McCain who really wanted us off our land. He did the same thing to people in Tucson, in Yuma, and another small community called Gila Bend. All four of us in these areas were going through the same exact thing. And so far, you know, we've got our lives back. But that's how Dave Hodges came to be, you know, in the media. The only experience I ever had in the media before was, I think, two times I was interviewed in college by a local radio station that wanted to know something about a basketball game I'd played in. And, of course, when I was a coach, I occasionally had dealings with the media, but nothing of a major nature. So I come at this really as a novice. I have no media training, and I'm sure it shows. But I think my message is sincere, and people that want to read and listen to what I have to say, I think know that I'm sincere in what I'm saying, and I think that might be the attraction because it certainly isn't my media skill.
Oh, neither with us. You've got quite the loyal following, and you've got your audience is ever growing. And that's not by accident. I mean, that's because you put out information of a very serious and a very – I mean, there's a lot of meat in your radio show, a lot of meat in your articles. And that's why I love to read them, because they're very well researched, very well put together, and it's presented in a way even I can understand. And I'm not saying that, you know, it's not disparaging me, but it's really, you know, sometimes you can read an article that you wonder why perhaps you've read it. It feels like you feel like you wasted 15 minutes of your life, but your articles are right on the money. And really, going back to the article that you wrote yesterday, The Americans at Risk, just all of the points that you laid out there, the low morale, the overworked and underpaid and undervalued with respect to our military, the compromising of the most important weapons system in the Navy, how Obama has weakened the reach and power of our military. And, you know, stopping right there, and you mentioned the petrodollar during this conversation. I mean, the military, the ability, I mean, the petrodollar exists only because our military is able to protect the free flow of oil or energy, perhaps more comprehensively, throughout the free world. And when it is cut off or otherwise either cut off through an economic situation or militarily, we're done. And it seems we seem to be going in that direction. It's a full court press against the petrodollar or against the U.S. dollar, period. And we see Obama, as well as the asymmetrical warfare by other countries, specifically Russia and China, wanting to take us out. But we're also wanting to take ourselves out at the highest levels. 2011 interview with Kyle Bass, or by Kyle Bass with presumably Timothy Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, we're just going to kill the dollar. This is all for, I believe, the ultimate dismantling, as you point out, of the leadership of the American military, as well as the subjugation of our country to a global empire. So all of this, man, it's just incredible as we sit here in 2015 looking at all of this, and things that seem to be happening, David, at a very exponentially fast rate. I don't know. What do you think? It just seems like every day you hit headlines or you see headlines that are just so, they're so important. We're being just bombarded with information, with headlines, with news stories that are just taking us further down this path of no return. And I think right now we're at a point where we're not going to be able to turn this ship around, this global anarchy that we're facing. We're not going to be able to turn this around, I don't think. We might be able to delay it through exposing information, through getting other people on board and making them aware of what's going on. But you know, bottom line here is I think we're going to be facing this terrible, terrible scenario here, whether it be in 2015, 2016, or if God maintains a hand of protection, perhaps another year after that. But I don't see this ending well at all.
Well, not without some kind of spiritual revival. I think we're a nation under judgment, And I don't know that God's going to hear our prayers collectively. I think individually there's salvation, certainly there is there, but we're in deep trouble. This reminds me of this, Doug. It's kind of like you're playing a superior opponent in an athletic contest, and you know you're going to lose. The question is, how badly are you going to lose? That's what we're looking at here with regard to our country. A lot of times I try to, and this is kind of going back to old coaching strategies, I always used to try to put myself in the mind of the opposing coach and how he would see us and how he would try to attack us to try to anticipate what he might do. And so I try to apply that strategy to thinking like the globalists. I'm not quite as satanic as they are, but I try to think about what's their goal and how to best go about it. And I'm thinking, how bad will it get for this country? Well, I think if the globalists truly get their way, I think that what they'll want to do is extinguish the concepts of liberty, the First Ten Amendments, you know, the Bill of Rights, our entrepreneurial spirit. I think that they want to crush this country into ashes, the important values, so there's no hope of rekindling the United States. See, we could be defeated. But, you know, the spirit of liberty lives on, kind of like the Red Dawn Wolverine scenario, only right. to reemerge in a different form, to fight back, and maybe you could reestablish the old union if you're successful. If I'm the other side, I want to prevent that moment from ever happening, and you have to crush the spirit of liberty and freedom and the belief in Jesus Christ out of the country that you're conquering. I think it's going to get really, really ugly just for that reason alone.
Wow. If I can, let me make a correction. You know, we've been talking this evening, and I mentioned your article of yesterday, but equally important, if not more important, is your article from the 17th, which you referenced, that being the Grand Chessboard of World War III. All of Dave's articles are important, but certainly the Grand Chessboard of World War III, which was published on the 17th of January, extremely critical, extremely, well, required reading, definitely. You get into a lot of things, the ISIS factor, and, of course, the Middle East situation, the birth of the petrodollar, and how that came about, and, of course, now being on the precipice of World War III. You know, I'm looking here, and we've done a lot of programs on this, Syria, not to take us too far down an alternative path here, but Syria, it appears, I mean, we've created so many, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of refugees by backing the anti-Assad rebels. And we attempted to frame Assad for, not that he's a good guy, but we attempted to frame him for a chemical weapons incident that was actually done by members of our own side, if you will. By Western intelligence, shall we say. But Syria, it looks like, will be maybe the first domino to go here. You're right that Syria is the first real domino in the coming conflict. But the humanitarian crises, plural, that we're creating in the Middle East through Arab Spring and others, but it's just incredible. But Syria will be, and I believe that all eyes should remain on Syria. I believe it's a death race Damascus situation, and from there, and as you point out, first Syria, then Iran. And I asked Van Dale this yesterday. Let me ask you this. Why didn't the United States or the West, why didn't we do something with Iran during the Bush years or early on? Why did we allow them to go this far in terms of the nuclear capabilities that they have?
I think we have to look at the Bush administration for the answer to that question. We know that the grand chessboard of Zygmunt Brzezinski, George Soros, and all their friends extend beyond the presidential term. And I think the reason that Bush was not permitted to go after Iran is because it was known that Iran and Syria would be the flashpoint for the future Third World War.
Okay. All right.
And they didn't want to mess.
Yeah, just as we did not go directly into Baghdad, our mandate was somewhat both slippery and thin back in the first Gulf War, but since we didn't go to Baghdad back then to take out Saddam Hussein, which ultimately, in retrospect, was probably a good thing, I suppose. I don't mean to elevate Hussein above the people that he'd murdered, but the fact is, you know, you're messing around with geopolitical issues that would change the entire complexion of the Middle East. And of course, we saw that happen anyway with the Arab Spring, and of course, our subsequent invasion of Iraq, and Afghanistan. My goodness, it just seems like they were really, you know, at this point, if you woke up tomorrow morning to a headline that we said nukes are flying over in the Middle East, I wouldn't be surprised, would you? I mean, at this point?
No, I think what's going to happen will come like a thief in the night. It's just hard to say right now what form that the conflict is going to come in.
Yeah, that's about right. And do you have any, and I know you address this in your article, once again, excellent article, folks, the Grand Chessboard of World War III, I know you address this in the article, but do you have any doubt in your mind, or do you have doubt that if Iran became a nuclear equipped, that they would immediately or shortly attack Israel, you know, make them a dust or a glass slab over there?
Well, if I'm Putin, and I'll answer the question this way. If I'm Putin, I need allies. And the best way to become an ally of Putin in the Middle East is to be able to take on Israel. The only way you can take on Israel is to be a nuclear power. I find it hard to believe, although I do not know, nor do my sources claim to know for sure, but I find it hard to believe that Iran does not already house nuclear weapons.
I agree with that. And I've read many books that would substantiate that. I'm looking, trying to see the title of one of the books. I think it's in my office.
There's lots of reports both ways saying that, you know, Iran's already nuclear capable. Iran is not nuclear capable. Iran will be nuclear capable in 3 months, 6 months, a year. We see all these conflicting reports coming from our media sources and media sources across the world, including many Russian media sources. It seems they pay close attention to this, only from a different perspective than the U.S. media sources. And, you know, this is where things are headed. I was talking with my dad before the show. They're looking to move the doomsday clock again. Tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time, they're going to make the announcement of how it's going to move. When I brought that up to my father, he said, I bet they'll move it back. And for those who don't know what the Doomsday Clock is, the Manhattan Project employees or people who were involved in creating the atomic bomb created this clock to show the world how close we were to doomsday. And it's been around since 1947, I believe, or 44, 47. And last time it was moved from 6 minutes to 5 minutes was in January of 2012. And the closer you get to midnight, the closer it is to the end of the world.
Via nuclear annihilation.
And I wonder, you know, how much of what you said, Dad, that they'll move it back is actually accurate, because we see that they're trying to placate things as though they're fine. You know, the economy's great. The president cut half the deficit. You know, the last quarter's projection for the growth of the economy was 5%, which means, you know, we're in a great growth period. Everything's trying to, the stock market numbers are great. Cash is down. Everything's being projected as that all is well in the U.S. when it actually it may look like that on paper through this manipulation, but it's the opposite in real life.
Yeah, exactly. And I personally, Dave, I really believe that the magic show, the illusion will continue. They'll perpetuate the myth that the world is safer than it's ever been, and I can't think of a more ridiculous statement than that in terms of the geopolitical status that we've got in front of us. I don't believe that. I believe that it's more treacherous than it's ever been in recent memory. You know, maybe even since the Cuban Missile Crisis. But that's just me. But my goodness, folks, we're talking to Dave Hodges, thecommonsenseshow.com, just like it sounds, thecommonsenseshow.com, prolific, great writer, great investigative researcher, a guy that I've got a lot of respect for, and I know, folks, that you and I, each one of us out there, we just love this guy. We love to listen to him. We love to read his articles, and we're just so glad that he's joined us tonight. And, man, I'll tell you, but Dave, I mean, you're a hardworking guy. You get up at the zero dark 30 every day. You do a, I mean, my goodness, I don't know how you stay upright half the time. I mean, you just, you know, you work a lot. I don't want to squander or mess with your time. You know, if you're you're invited to stay the entire show, the last hour, we can take calls, we can do anything. I just don't want to impose upon you. So I'm going
to
let you
know. I made a commitment. I'm happy to keep that commitment. I'm honored to be on your show, and I'd love to talk to your listeners.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you. And I mean that. Thank you so much, because I know, man, you know, 3 hours, and you do a fantastic program, folks, at the Common Sense Show. You've got to tune in. It's just one of – look, I listen, and I get a lot of information. It's not 3 hours wasted. It's not my night wasted. The Common Sense Show at thecommonsenseshow.com. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief interlude. Please stay with us.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number three of this Wednesday, January 21st edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report. Our guest is Mr. Dave Hodges. His website is thecommonsenseshow.com. And we're going to be taking your calls this hour at 661-244-9839. That's 661-244-9839. And,
all right. Melody, thank you very much for your email. She writes, I think Iran has weapons that are very powerful, and they've had them for a long time. The question is this. Does Dave think this, or you guys, even ancient technology there, that maybe is why we cannot hit that area? Just wondering. And Melody, I think that Dave covered that with respect to believing that they are more powerful. Iran already have nuclear weapons, or they're nuclear powered. But if, in fact, Israeli TV, and she sent a link where the Iranian missile can reach far beyond Europe, their missile. And the book I had, it was written, I think, in 2004, 2005. My goodness, it's in my office. I didn't grab it during the break, but nonetheless, it does speak to that. So, you know, yeah, it's something. But let's go to the phones, Joe.
All right, we're going to go to area code 786 first. 786, you're live on the Hagman & Hagman Report. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. You're talking with Dave Hodges and Doug and Joe. But you have a question for Dave?
Yeah, Dave, I was thank you for all your research. You do put a lot of time and effort into finding out what's really going on behind the scenes, and I appreciate a lot of your writings. But I've got a question that it's this. For me, is not meshing with the Word of God. When it comes to the general consensus among prophecy leaders, is that Gog and Magog is Russia, a confederation with Russia leading it against Israel. But in Ezekiel 39:11, it says that God buries Gog on the mountains of Israel. And if that war happens before the thousand-year reign, who is the Gog that comes up in Revelation 20, verse 9? It says Gog. After 1,000 years has passed, Satan is released, and then Gog and Magog innumerable horde comes up against Jerusalem, and that's after the thousand-year reign. And that's why I'm having trouble working with the Gog and Magog happening before the thousand-year reign.
Wow.
I don't know about you and Joe, but I'm confused on these points as well. Sometimes I read it and I think I understand it. I hear it explained, I think I understand it. And then I hear a different version, I go, oh, I hadn't thought about that. And I think it's one of those moments. And I think it's partly what a lot of people talk about, that we won't know the hour of the day, the moment of Jesus' return. And I think that what we're talking about here, particularly in Revelations, is really wrapped in mystery. And I think we'll understand it, or the people who are alive at the time will understand it as it unfolds. I just think it's really hard for us to be sure that our human interpretation of the divine word is really accurate.
Okay. Well, I understand that. Now, let me ask you this. Now, in Daniel 11, it talks about the Antichrist being troubled by the king of the north and the king of the south. And from everybody that, from Hal Lindsey on, that I've been listening to, prophecy teachers, has said that the king of the north is probably Russia and some other countries north of Israel, and the king of the south is Egypt. And if, say, we are right in the middle of prophecy right now, wouldn't Obama right now in the United States, aren't they troubled by Russia from the north and from Egypt in the south, where they tried to overthrow, well, they did. They initially overthrew, and Obama installed the Muslim Brotherhood, Morsi, in with that fake revolution. Fortunately, the Egyptian people woke up to that and kicked them out. But is that the king of the north and south? Is Russia the king of the north that fights against the Antichrist in the Daniel Wars?
Well, you mentioned Hal Lindsey, and I used to watch his TV show a lot, and I'm not sure I can actually obtain it any longer. I don't think it's on my provider. But he talks about that extensively, and I believe mentions the power from the east, and I think we all know who that is. So I think you're right. I think that the nation states, as we understand them, as they're somehow related to in biblical prophecy, I think you do have a match. But again, I'm really cautious in this area. And let me tell you why. We're going to kind of take away from your question, forgive me for a moment, just give me a little latitude to bring this back. But, you know, we're always told we don't know the hour of the day or the moment of the return. I think we really can't be sure that we're living in the last days. We could perhaps push this back, or we'll go through some bad times but see some recoverability here going on with the planet, only to really realize this at a much later time. We don't know for sure that we're the generation. I mean, I know a lot of the signs are there, you know, the rise of Israel and so forth, but it's really hard to say for sure that what we're reading in the Bible specifically applies to 2015. What applies out of the Bible to us are the Ten Commandments, Jesus' teachings, how we should be living. That I can be sure of. But when you start, you know, correlating prophecy with current events, to me, that's a real slippery slope.
Right. Well, I understand that, but, I mean, don't we all, from listening to pretty much all the prophecy leaders, I mean, everybody automatically assigns Gog and Magog to Russia, though, so wouldn't that be doing the same thing we're assigning just in the current? You see what I'm saying? I'm like, if you're saying in one sense that you can't assign America to be Mystery Babylon or the seat
right.
of the Antichrist because we may not be in the end times, but automatically Russia is Gog and Magog. I'm not trying to make Russia – Russia has got a lot of blood on their hands, just like our U.S. government, so I'm not trying to make Russia or Putin have to be a great – person, but what I'm saying is that if we are in the end times, isn't the alignment there, and the Antichrist will be the head of the most powerful military on earth that nobody will be able to stand against him, and at this point in time, that would be the U.S. military with the fallen angel technology that we know that our government has made a deal with the devil to obtain.
The latter part I'm not quite as sure about, but the former part that you mentioned I totally agree with. I think if we apply a crossover interpretation between prophecy and the current events today, what you're saying is very, very logical. I just think we need to be careful not to say, well, this is absolutely it, because we are repeatedly warned that we don't know the time.
Mm-hmm. And I agree, Dave, and thank you, caller, for that, for those questions. You know, we do get these questions a lot, and trying to, as you said, Dave, fit current events into Bible prophecy, in my mind, I always say we got to take a step back, because usually after you see it come to pass, as we can read the scriptures about Jesus coming to the earth, and you know, hindsight's always 20/20. But trying to fit current events into today's world is trying to fit current events into Bible prophecy is a lot harder than it seems, especially with the way things change real time, the way governments rise and fall, economies rise and fall. Things are constantly changing.
Absolutely, and Dave, if we can, I'll tell you are a call magnet. Our board is full of callers, but the don't worry. I mean, you can still call in 661-244-9839. Here's a question that came through our studio, or contact the forum at hagman.com from Margo. She writes this, I, as many Americans, cannot believe anything that comes out of this White House or the controlled media. This is about the Internet, Dave. If they would take the Internet down or neuter it, and we cannot get to folks like us or like you, what would be the signs for World War III that we... let's see here. What is our sign or signs that World War III has actually gotten out of cyberspace. Do you see a trigger or triggers that will be telling us what is coming? In other words, you know, some type of heads up, you know, like we're right there.
Coded headlines to real-time events?
Yeah, yeah. So I'll stop right there, and that's the question.
Right off the top of the show, I said there are a lot of different avenues to the collapse that's coming. I'll give you something that I've become privy to in terms of weaponry, and this could trigger a collapse. I didn't even think of this, but it makes a great deal of sense. When you think about Project HARP, Project HARP can work and become a weapon by beaming. It's kind of like shooting a pool ball off the side wall, and you hit a ball at an angle and knock it into the hole. Well, HARP kind of works that way in relationship to the ionosphere, and you beam an array of antenna up, and you can broad beam it, or you can narrow focus the beam, and you can bring it back to Earth, and you can do a number of things with HARP. I mean, it's been well documented. If you change frequencies, you can change emotionality and thinking of people, but it also could be weaponized. And so if you bring it back and you weaponize it, you could weaponize it in terms of like pulse beam or laser beam type weaponology, but my mind's not going there at the moment. What I think we could be looking at with HARP as a trigger, and no one's talking about this, why couldn't HARP be used? And I've been told this by one of my military contacts that the technology exists. HARP could be brought in to do an EMP in a localized area. You know, I've never heard anyone talk about that except for the source that I have, a military source, who's, you know, basically his background was in this kind of technology. And he said the technology's there if we choose to harness it. He said the Russians and the Chinese have it as well, too. And he said that you could EMP local communities, you could EMP Washington, D.C., but the old theory about EMP attacks, and I've really kind of been misunderstood on this point. I don't believe the Chinese could do an EMP attack, but it won't be a general. The old model is you launch two nuclear weapons, and they detonate high altitude above mid-continent United States, and it takes down the power grid, except for everything that's hardened against an EMP. Right. But this is a whole different approach. And I think that that is one possibility that we could be facing. Certainly the cyber attacks on the banks and the financial institutions that we've been talking about with regard to some of the computer graphics I've seen and what's been revealed here on the show that's publicly available, that's a possibility too. And it could be too that one day you have one too many straws on that camel's back and the debt is overwhelming and people lose confidence, the currency hyperinflates, and just like Germany in pre-Nazi years, the Weimar Republic collapses due to hyperinflation. And I had relatives that were living in Germany at the time, and they've told me stories where they used to have to shut down their stores at lunch just to change the prices because the inflation was so dramatic. And this was before, you know, we had computerized pricing, electronic digital displays for that pricing. They had to manually go through and change all the prices. And when you're looking at what could happen to trigger all this, I mean, pick your poison. I could talk literally, probably come up here with a couple of dozen scenarios that could cause a calamity resulting in an economic collapse followed by World War III.
Yeah, I agree.
Dave, what you talked about with the EMP attacks is something that was recently publicated in a 2007 military document that was publicated this last, in the end of 2014, that talked about the EMP threat not being as reliable as they once thought, just as you said, saying that, you know, they wouldn't be able to be assured to be able to knock out a whole region or area unless it was a more tactical type of EMP weapon. And that's right along the lines with what you're saying, which is a change of pace from what we've been hearing for a long time. Not that it's impossible to do so, but as you said, much more reliable to hit isolated pockets than to try to hit a whole country or, you know,
well,
hemisphere.
Dave, have you heard about the U.S. military using weapons, I suppose, similar to what you're talking about, these very geographically specific weapons, kind of like a mobile EMP where they can push a button. To my understanding, it's all electrical, where they can push a button and just knock out the fry the circuitry in like a 5 or 6 block area. And I believe that they were used, and I'm not certain, I don't recall all the specifics, but I believe they were used over in Iraq, I'm sorry, here, well, at least this decade. Have you heard anything about that?
In fact, that really goes back to the HARP discussion,
okay.
That you could narrow beam it to a house, to a neighborhood, a community. You could broad beam it to an entire city. But I've been told the technology exists. And hypothetically, I mean, I can get my mind around this pretty easily. I can see how this would happen and why it would be an appealing weapon. Let me give you another way it could be used. This is going to be something that's going to make people sleep under the bed when they consider this. Imagine a focused EMP attack on nuclear power plants.
Oh.
And let's say that you had, there's 124, I believe, in the United States. So let's say you had 124 simultaneous attacks. First of all, these nuclear power plants, and I've done a lot of research on this and I've written on it, some of them can survive up to a week, you know, without going into serious meltdown. They've got the reserve capacities. Some of them won't last 2 or 3 days. And if you have 124 of them, what are the likelihood that you're going to be able to save the entire system from a catastrophic meltdown? Can you imagine, let's just say you could maybe save 10%, which I think is realistic. Can you imagine that kind of a meltdown inside the United States where perhaps you'd have over 100 Fukushimas going on at the same time?
No, I mean, I prefer not to imagine it. But what would be, it's always been my understanding, and I could be totally wrong, one plan would say, well, we're not going to scorch the earth of the entirety of the North American continent, because we're going to go over there and take their spoils. So why would they do something like that? I can see perhaps knocking out some strategically located power plants, but not to the extent of sullying or making America uninhabitable.
I can give you a reason why.
Okay.
And it may not be correct, but it makes sense to me. If you look at what's going on the planet, let's just go back 5 years. We're pre-fifth anniversary of the Gulf oil spill. And what happened there was the Gulf Stream slowed down dramatically. And some of the European students that I've had as students tell me to a person, Russia, Germany, Sweden, so forth, they tell me to a person that they are taught in their high schools that someday, because the temperatures are changing and Europe's gone through terrible winters, because the Gulf Stream is not mitigating the weather coming off the Arctic, and so Europe is really going through a kind of a mini ice age. A lot of people think it's the beginning of it. And what they teach their students in Europe is they're going to have to someday relocate to the continent of Africa. Well, that's event number one. Okay, event number two is what we're doing with the chemtrailing. I mean, we're fouling in our own nest, and we're destroying our air. We're making it toxic. It's got these bad chemicals to breathe, Alzheimer's, heart attacks, cancer. All these chemicals they are spraying on us are designed to do this. And this is massive spraying across the planet in major areas in modern countries. And then you've got Fukushima. It's the gift that keeps on giving. We're basically looking at mass species extinction in the Pacific, and we know these plumes of radiation are reaching us. Let me just step back, and I could go through three or four more scenarios, but I think you get the idea where I'm going. It's almost like, it's almost as if someone's, for lack of a better term, terraforming the planet to change the planet in some dramatic fashion where it's not usable or suitable for human living. And I started, I'll tell you what a lot of people say, as I've had this discussion with people, the subject of extraterrestrials comes up. There was a movie made back in the 90s called The Arrival with Charlie Sheen, and it was a science fiction movie where aliens arrived, they infiltrated humanity, controlled NASA, and they were causing the planet to heat up to where eventually humans would be extinguished and they would come in and take over. Some people think that when they look at these disasters that have happened in such close proximity to each other that we're seeing a terraforming of the planet, but I don't think it has anything to do with extraterrestrials. What I think it has to do with is transhumanism. I could kind of see a scenario here where the Ray Kurzweils and these people who are championing this kind of technology, this is the way they're going to exterminate humanity and usher in the machine-human hybrid age. Just a theory, but we sure have a lot going on this planet that's devastating, and it sure isn't climate change. We have a lot worse things going on. I mean, Fukushima is so bad that what did our government first do in March of the year that it happened? What they did is they changed the lethal radiation warnings up. They upgraded it by 1,000 times. And then they stopped measuring. So we don't even know what we're being hit with for sure on a mass scale. And you look at the Gulf. The Gulf, I wrote an 8-part series on the Gulf shortly after it happened. The Gulf's still leaking oil. I know this for a fact. I've got a lot of sources down there. They're still spraying the Corexit. There's a lot of reason why they're doing that. They're changing the whole ecoculture of the Gulf. And I'll tell you what's scary for the people in the Gulf, and if you're listening, you might want to consider if you could get a job in a different part of the country, because I wrote about this extensively the year after the Gulf oil explosion. The Exxon Valdez workers used the same kind of Corexit, which is banned in 17 countries, and they used it on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska. Not one of those guys is alive today. They all died around the age of 51, and it's made me predict, based on some of the toxic studies that have come out from people like Dr. Wilma Subra, Kim Cook from Oregon State University, they're finding benzene levels, for example, in people's blood that's 60 to 65 times higher than the predicted level. We have an entire region of our country whose lifespans are going to be dramatically lowered. Problem is we won't have real numbers on this for at least another 15 to 30 years. But it's underway right now. And you're looking at this, and, to kind of dredge up old history, if people really want to read about what happened in the Gulf, go to my website and go to the search engine of the Common Sense Show and put in the Great Gulf Coast Holocaust and read all 8 parts. But read the part that has this. And this was a deliberate event. And this is why I think the planet is deliberately being changed. I think this was a predictable event when I look back on it. But let's look at what happened in short proximity to the oil explosion. You had Halliburton doing repair work at the base of the Transocean's oil rig that they owned where the explosion was. But 10 days prior to that, the oil explosion, Halliburton went out and bought Boots and Coots, which was the largest oil cleanup firm in the world. What an amazing coincidence. Well, the BP CEO started ditching his BP stock 2 weeks before, as did Goldman Sachs. The morning of the explosion, Transocean, the owner of the oil rig, did a put option on its stock for preferred insiders to guarantee the price of the stock no matter what happened, and that was the day of. I could go on and talk about more of these coincidences in quotes, but this was clearly an orchestrated, planned event, and it's really, really complicated. Some night we should do a show on this, because I probably should write a book. I certainly have enough material, and it was an earth-changing event, and it certainly is going to be a lifespan-altering event for a lot of people in the Gulf. So what we're looking at here, is, I believe, is a contrived event to change ecology. They had to know that the Gulf Stream would eventually slow because of the massive oil leakage. Then you look at Fukushima, and we know all the conspiracy theories, Stuxnet, whatever, about what happened with Fukushima. These are two major events. And then we start looking at, what are GMOs doing to us? Well, we don't know. Well, why don't we know? Because this is the only foodstuff that our government doesn't require to be tested or labeled. Then, as I mentioned earlier, we've got the chemtrails poisoning us. We got the fluoride in the water. We got the mercury-laden vaccines and all the stuff now that we're finding out in vaccines we didn't know about before. I mean, humanity is under an intense attack. And it's all about changing humans, and it's all about changing our environment. And when you step back and take a macro view of the planet, I actually did this one time. I printed out a global map, and I started writing all the things on the map that are happening. And I'm looking at this, go, this is too proximity. These events are in too close a proximity to each other to be an accident. I mean, the statistical chances of all these events happening within a 4 or 5 year period, it's kind of like the killing of Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, and not thinking they weren't somehow orchestrated by the same group for the same reasons. You've got proximitous events, and you're devastating to the ecology, to the economy, to personal health, and there's no sign this stuff is ever going to end. And then you have to ask yourself, why? What's the purpose behind this? Well, if you look at what Steve has written about, and I'm talking Steve Quayle, transhumanism, it would make sense if you want to usher in a machine-human hybrid that could live forever in a population-reduced world of 90%, that you'd want to exterminate a lot of the life, and maybe this is the way they're going to do it, only a theory. But I haven't heard anyone address this in a meaningful way, and I think we should be talking about this.
Man, that's fantastic.
Absolutely. Dave. Let's go back to the phone here. We have a number of callers. We're going to go to area code 480. 480, you're up next. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report with Dave Hodges.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, Dave. Well, that was a mouthful. I'm calling from Phoenix. And I, about a year ago, they came out and they marked all the water lines here. And they put blue dots on some of the water lids. And they changed my water lid to a white lid. And I called up the city of Phoenix because I lived in this house 15 years. And I said, why did you change out my lid? And they said, the EPA said it, they had new mandates that it must have been an older lid. But my lid, I was one of the newer homes built in the neighborhood. And none of the other homes in the neighborhood had their lids changed out to white. And gradually, they've been coming in and they've been changing them out. Now, my concern is that they're marking us, that it's a way that if we did have an EMP, like we just discussed, that they would be, it would be an easy way that we're marked. We did have a drill in our neighborhood. We have one of the freshwater lakes in Phoenix. It's a well lake. It's fed by well. And so they did have, remember when the DOD did that drill here with the City of Phoenix police? They did a massive drill in my neighborhood.
Just in your neighborhood, caller? I mean, just in your neighborhood, or was this a... Okay.
It was in my neighborhood that they actually did the drill, where they had the SWAT, they had a staging car, they were down in the park because the park's between the two lakes,
right.
And then they had the Black Hawk helicopters flying over. And I just want people to be aware that I think that they're marking people with these dots and with the white lids. And I just want, I know it sounds crazy, but there's no explanation why I thought that they could change it, why they changed out my lid. There was nothing wrong with my lid, and I just didn't know.
Do you live in proximity to the Arcadia area?
No, I live in Ahwatukee.
I've heard this story out of Arcadia. And for the listeners who aren't familiar with Phoenix geography, Arcadia is kind of Scottsdale / East Phoenix. And I've heard the same story.
Huh.
Okay. And I have a place up north on the rim, and I've been up there 10 years. And the tree by our water lid was marked with a blue dot. And I called up the water company. It's just a small-town water company. And I said, why did they mark my tree? And she said, oh, no, we would never mark the tree. I'm like, well, my tree was marked with the blue dot. And my husband said, well, it's so that, you know, if it snows, they can see it. I'm like, well, why after 10 years have they marked in their tree, putting a blue dot on it? And I started looking up there, and some of the water lids up there are starting to be marked with blue dots. And I just think this is the way that they're marking people out here. They did all these lines. They came through. It was a company contracted out of Illinois. And they came through, and they marked, they marked all the lines. This was almost going on 2 years, and they never did any work. you know? So it just doesn't make sense to me.
Caller, thank you so much. Dave, I mean, yeah, you've heard about this. What's their intent? Caller, God bless you. Thank you so much. I'll let you respond, Dave.
I'm trying to remember, but I think Steve Quayle might have mentioned this once on my show a couple of years ago. I think it might have been Steve. Forgive me if it's not, but red list, blue list, and marking in various different ways. This is what I go to when I think of this. There could be another reason, too. I mean, who knows? There's so many different technologies they're throwing at us. This could be technology-based. I don't know. It's just hard to say. I heard a story out of people that I know that live in the Arcadia area where they have found the same things, and they call their utility company only to be told, oh, you're imagining it, we don't do that, that kind of thing.
Wow. Well, one thing I do know is I'm sure you've got red dots all over your property, red dots, painted stars, stripes, you know, arrows pointing to Dave Hodges lives here, and a big red dot on your roof, no doubt. Oh, my goodness, I'm telling you. Yeah.
Let's take another call here. We'll go to area code 217. 217, we're coming to you now. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report with Dave Hodges.
Hi, guys. I can't believe I got on when you said the phone line lit up. First of all, I want to say good talking to all of you with Dave on, and Dave, it was a great show the other night.
Thank you.
I got a couple of things. I'm going to throw the first two out quick because I know there's other callers. First is the gentleman called about the timeline of prophecy. I'm not a prophecy expert, but I've really been learning a lot the last couple of years listening to Steve Quayle and your show. There's just so much stuff, and I think that as time progresses, just like the seal is closed until the end times, we're learning more and more things. I'm learning things now I didn't learn when I was in church, when I was in high school.
Me
and
too.
Now I'm seeing, okay, it's like our understanding of the Bible's changing. Now, here's my thing I was going to get to about this. I think our understanding of 1,000 years, millennium, might be off a little. And I, like I said, I'm not an expert, but what if we are actually at, we've already went through this 1,000 years, and we're at this 1,000 years? There might be something we don't understand about the term peace, because for at least 2,000 years, the Holy Spirit has dwelled on the earth, okay? 1,000 years after the Holy Spirit started here, that could be the reign of Christ on the earth through the Holy Spirit, and then the devil was released, because there hasn't really been relatively peace, but there's been a lot of, in some ways, there's been, maybe it's, they mean peace in mind and peace in spirit, because Christians in the old days, they had a lot more faith than we do. Now, that's just something, maybe another guest can expound on that, but what if our understanding is such that, I mean, all I'm saying is, we line up, like you take a transparency sheet, and one, the first layer has one, like your foundation drawing, and the second has the first floor. When we lay it down, maybe it's not lined up right. If we slide it over, we line the end times prophecies up with the end of the 1,000-year reign. Maybe that's where the overlap should be. So I'd like to hear more about that from someone who's smarter than me. My other thing is going to be about the mark of the beast. I think the mark of the beast could possibly be, aside from what Steve Quayle says, where it changes our DNA, what if it cuts off the faith center of our brain where we cannot cry out to God and we become known to God, and that is a form of the blasphemy of the Holy Ghost that cuts us off from our salvation? That's a thought I've had.
I don't think God would permit that.
Well, that's why he said we can't take the mark of the beast, because we would lose our soul. I don't know. That's just a thought. I think this technology, they're already saying they can access our brain and put thoughts in our mind. What if they could hypnotize us? Or what if they could, you know, we have...
Yeah, no. These are all great questions, and God bless you for asking them. If you were talking about the transhumanism, I thought that's going to play a very important part in this. We know that we can't get tricked. Caller, we know we can't get tricked into taking the mark of the beast. We know that. However, when we do take that, because we've got to swear an allegiance to the
Antichrist. Anybody who takes that, as it says in the Bible,
is going to be
not written into life.
Right. So taking it, I believe, in a very, if you willingly take it and you go to worship the image of the beast by taking that mark. It's my personal belief that there is some interaction with your DNA that will, instead of having DNA that communicates with God, it's going to be cut off from that and perhaps communicate the Antichrist spirit or not communicate at all. That's just my belief. But having said that, Caller, great, great stuff. Steve Quayle is going to be on tomorrow night with Nathan Leal. Perhaps we'll pose some of those questions to Stephen and Nathan.
All right, let's go to another caller here. We're going to go to area code 205. 205, we're coming to you now. You're live with Dave Hodges. What's on your mind tonight?
Gentlemen, hey, this is Ken in Birmingham. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Ken.
Ken, you're the man.
Good.
Ken, you're the man.
Hey there. I wanted to ask Mr. Hodges, have you done any research on the weapon systems that the Russians have? It's my understanding that when the Soviet Union collapsed and they didn't have the money that they needed to build aircraft carriers and things like that, that what money they had, they devoted to a very extensive research into building superior missiles. It's my understanding that they have some of the best, fastest, most sophisticated missiles of any country in the world. Their missiles fly at a higher speed, and as they approach a target, they can actually do, I guess you call it, sidewinder maneuvers so that they can dodge the computer-controlled guns that would try to shoot them down. I'd like to know what Mr. Hodges knows about that.
That's true, and that's starting to come out. The emphasis, though, was not so much on the offensive application, and that's an offensive weapon you're describing, but the Russians have second-to-none surface-to-air missiles. They have some of the best air they have the best air defense system in the world, and it would make it very difficult to successfully invade them. Because of our inferior size of our land-based military, we would rely heavily on missiles and planes to do a lot of the work for us, and the Russians are set to counter that. So you're correct that that's where they put their money. Now, they are devoting, I'm trying to remember the figure. I just wrote on this a couple of weeks ago. I want to say that in the past few years, Putin has dedicated over $600 billion towards upgrade of Russian military technology. In fact, I think it's closer to $700.
Wow.
So they're definitely scaling up, and they have they've worked a lot with stealth, although I think the Chinese probably are the trendsetter there. And the Russians have also improved their stealth of their nuclear submarine fleet. We used to have an advantage compared to the Chinese and the Russians, where we had all these nuclear submarines that you could not find, and they were capable. Each one carries a payload of 8 nuclear missiles, each capable of taking out a city somewhat the size of Phoenix. And so they were devastating. And you might win a war up on the surface, but you knew that that attack was coming from the American submarines. Well, now they have the ability to track these submarines with greater accuracy because of improved satellite technology, and the Russians and Chinese are really enhancing the sophistication and the numbers of nuclear submarines that they have available to them. And so what used to be our primary advantage headed into a third world war has largely been negated, and Obama has really been at the forefront of retarding our moving forward with our nuclear missile technology as it relates to submarines.
Man. that's got to answer your question, Ken. Thank you for that. Wow, that's amazing.
We got 10 minutes left. We have a few more callers.
Yeah, before Joe, hang on just 1 second. If I can just say this, folks, if you please do this. Go to thecommonsenseshow.com. I want to tell you something. I just have never met a guy. Dave Hodges has really done a lot of research, investigation, spent a lot of time away from his family, and just really put himself on the front line. So what I'd like everyone to do, you might be in a position to donate to the Common Sense Show, donate to Dave Hodges. Man, I'll tell you, I cannot think of a more worthy recipient of any extra cash you might have by donating to the Common Sense Show. It's really paying for the information that you get for free, or contributing to his research. And I really want to. That's on my heart, it's on my heart because you've done a lot, Dave, to really advance the knowledge, increase the knowledge of our listeners and your listeners and your site, your readers. So I just would encourage everyone to support Mr. Hodges. The link is on thecommonsenseshow.com. Right underneath the Listen to Dave Live on Sundays. Go ahead, Joe. I didn't mean to.
All right, let's see. We'll do one more caller in here. We'll go to area code.
Before we take a caller, can I make a shameless plug here before we run out of time?
Sure.
My radio show has a new home, and I'm grateful to RBN for the platform they've offered me for the past 6+ years, but I decided that I could best serve the public in bringing forth what I think is the message of truth and trying to motivate people to prepare for what's coming and influence the events that are happening. I decided to branch out on my own, and I've gone satellite and on my own. And so people say, well, how do I find you? Well, my show is exactly at the same time, 9 p.m. to midnight, and that's in the central time zone. And the way you listen to it, if you go to my website, is exactly the same. You just click on Listen to Dave. Now, I've also posted a lot of articles I've written, and I'll do this with each show description. If they talk about our upcoming guests, I'll post the different ways that you can listen. And we have live stream, we have mobile, we have listen by phone, and that'll be prominently displayed on my website. So I would invite people to just make that easy shift over, same time, same kind of format, same kind of show, and come on in and listen, because I really think that our time is short, and I'm hopeful that I can provide a town hall type of environment where we can coalesce our power together to try to stave off what's coming.
Amen, brother. And that's right. Very exciting, folks. It's exciting that the new platform is exciting. I'm going to stop there. Go ahead. If we can.
We'll get one more caller, and we're going to go to area code 815. 815, we're coming to you now. You're live with Dave Hodges.
Yes, Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, my question is that not only is the oil prices turning to bankrupt Russia, but it's also affecting China's economy because it's slowing down their growth, and their real estate prices have fallen down 4 months straight. And I hear from financial expert Harry Benn that China has the biggest real estate bubble, and do you think that's going to crash if the house prices continue to fall?
Yeah, there's no question. We're playing chicken with our adversaries. Now, I don't feel sorry for China or Russia. I feel sorry for their people, because the people are the ones who suffer when this crap goes on. But I don't feel sorry for their leadership. They threatened to nuke us over Syria and Iran. And I don't think we should be meddling into everyone's business. But China and Russia showed their true colors 2 years ago when they both threatened to nuke us on multiple occasions. And they're kind of reaping their own karma right now. That they're just as guilty as to what the state of the planet is our own criminal administration. and they're going to have a housing crash in China. Of course, that'll be real opportune for them to move these Chinese into their Agenda 21 prepared ghost cities where there are micro apartments of 250 to 500 square feet. And you may have seen, I've published these pictures on my website of these massive ghost cities, and they're moving Chinese into these now at a tremendous rate. The figures vary. I'm reading they're moving them at 250,000 a month to a million people a month, depending on who you talk to. Hank Paulson's involved with this, along as Goldman Sachs, and they have all these cities in China that they've newly constructed. They're like ghost cities with these high-rise apartments, and what they're doing by gunpoint is going to the outlying regions in China where they think they might have revolution possibilities, and they're relocating these Chinese peasants into the cities, and then they're forcing manufacturing into the cities, and they're trying to basically convert China from being a rural nation to an urban nation that's industrialized. And it's working because recently, I think it was a year ago, China just passed the 50% threshold where over half their people now live in cities. So China is going to go through a big crash. Russia is not going to let itself go through a big crash, and I don't think China will either. I think if China is pushed to the point of having a big housing bubble, look for them to make a military move on Taiwan. And I agree with Doug and Joe. I think World War III starts in Syria, but I think that could change with a collapsed Chinese economy because then an invasion of Taiwan could be a trigger incident.
Wow, that's a good point.
Thank you, caller, for that call.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm not sure if we have any time left. Can we sneak in one more?
Yeah, we can sneak in one more.
Right.
We're going to go to area code 626. 626, you're the last caller for the evening with Dave Hodges. Go ahead.
Hey, Doug and Joe, it's John. How are you guys?
Good, John.
Good. I'll keep this really brief because I'm interested to hear Dave's answer. Dave, quick question. One of the stories that's starting to kind of get some legs for this week, the David Crowley story. So my question for you this evening, Dave, is this, and I'll take my answer off air. Are we in a situation where we are witnessing over the past 18 months or so either multinational corporation-sponsored or U.S. government-sponsored hit teams that are moving about cleaning up the banking situation with also with journalists, filmmakers, et cetera? And I'll just take my answer off air. God bless.
Thanks, John.
You asked a question that it's probably 2 days or 3 days away from me being able to give a good answer. I'm on this story. And it would appear – let me back up, and I'll tell you – we're going to talk about this on my show a week from Sunday. I'm having Joshua Coy on from Birmingham, Alabama. He's a talk show host down there on a huge FM station. And we've been working on this story, and we have different sides of this story. He knows, and I've kind of been told the same thing by my sources, that disaffected military are launching cyber attacks against banks, the Federal Reserve, and so forth. They're ticked. There is an army, underground army of resistance, of cyber warriors. And also at the same time, these murders of the bankers, and I've been told this now for a year, and the story is consistent, and two of the sources of mine are actually fairly good. It's their belief that these bankers aren't being killed by higher-level bankers to keep them out of trouble, that these bankers are being murdered as warning signs to the more elite bankers that we're not going to take your takeover lightly, and we're going to start with your mid-levels and work our way up. And what I'm saying here quite clearly is this. Disaffected military who've been shown the door, as well as veterans who are disillusioned, are forming an underground resistance, a guerrilla army, if you will, and they're the ones taking out the bankers and launching some of these cyber attacks upon the institutions who are doing so much harm to this country. And I don't have this story fully developed, but it's fully developed enough to where I feel that this story is going to get legs. And Josh has one piece of it, I've got another, and we're going to unveil this a week from Sunday.
Oh, a week from Sunday. So, folks, what would that be? My goodness, that would be the 31st, a week from Sunday. Or no, the first. Thank you.
1st of February, yes. Yeah. We're going to do tours with Joshua Coy, and we're going to talk about a number of things, but this is one of the things that we're going to explore. I've been talking about this for some time. I wrote a couple of years ago, what form would the resistance take when the takeover happens? We have a lot of loyal military in this country. They are not all complicit with what's going on. A few of the top brass might be, but a lot of the people aren't. And I've written about how I think this is going to take the form of the Viet Cong, but it's not even going to be so much the hit-and-run strategies. I think it's going to be a lot of cyber terrorism. I think this is what the future holds for us if America totally gets subjugated. I think that what we're looking at here is a real possibility of a civil war, but not so much bloodshed, but more or less trying to take down infrastructure and so forth.
Very interesting, and certainly in this century, very possible, if not probable. Well, Dave, we're out of time. I know you've got to be exhausted, and I just want to thank you so much for your gift of time that you've given us. An incredible researcher, wonderful talk show host, catches a show every Sunday night. Folks, go to thecommonsenseshow.com, listen to Dave Sundays from 9 to midnight Central Time, or if you want the real time, it's 10 to 1 a.m. every Sunday night. That's Eastern Time. The Common Sense Show, Dave Hodges, a guy that I admire and respect, and of course urge everyone to support as well. That's The Common Sense Show, Dave Hodges. Dave, thank you so very much for being part of our show. What an A-list guest you are, and I just want to say thank you so much for everything you do.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
All right, brother. Thank you.
God bless
you, Dave.
We'll talk
soon. All right, folks, that'll do it for us tonight. Tomorrow, we're going to continue with A-list guests. Talk about the show tomorrow. Steve Quayle and Nathan Leal, both confirmed to be on tomorrow night. Steve Quayle,
talking about Russia,
Leal.
The bear.
Russia, the bear. And, wow, yeah, I'm not even going to give away the rest of it.
And Friday we have Katie from Essential Oils in the first hour at least.
Yeah.
So make sure you tune in the next 2 days as we close out the week. God bless each and every one of you until tomorrow. Have a good night.
Good night.